All right, everyone ready? Mitch?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm ready. Yep.
Solid. I'm good to start. Starting in. Are you recording, by the way?
Yeah, recording is running.
Cool. Starting in 5, 4, 3. Hello. Yeah, thank you. That's... Perfect. We're going to keep that in the recording. Hello, welcome to the Scotchcast for the week of the 23rd of May, 2015. I'm your host, Self Ghosting. Joining me today is Conrad Thurbleton Kirby.
Hello!
Were you the one with the fucking drink?
Yes, and watching the bars, it's still, you could still cut it out, and it would still be fine.
But I've already referred to it, it's too late. Mitch is also here with us this week.
Hello, everyone.
Oh, I was, and of course the guy we like having around, but we don't like it. We like having him around. Snoop Rama.
That's the nicest thing anyone has ever said to me. Thank you.
Yeah, someone finally actually said out loud that they like having you around for the first time ever.
Oh, you're the Farva to our Super Troopers, which apparently they're making another one of.
Are they? Oh.
Yes.
Speaking of stuff,
yes, video games.
That isn't video games. What have you been up to this week, Noob Rama? What have you been up to this week?
That isn't video games.
Yeah.
Well, nothing. I mean, I've been reading books. I've read
Mitch,
like.
What have you been up to this week?
What?
What? You said I gave you a chance.
I read two history books about the Pacific War, which like fits in really good with the video games I've been playing. Or do I not have
Mitch,
to?
What have you been doing this week? That is not video games.
What is this? Why no video games?
We'll get to there. What's up? What's up, Mitch?
I've just been working a bunch, and I saw a movie, which is a lot of fun. Mad Max. Maybe you've heard of it.
Yes.
It's a documentary on Australia, from what I've heard, so that's kind of cool.
It's also, yeah, it's highly accurate. It's actually pretty much one-to-one with my daily life. Like, I think this is a good time to add that the three important people here, so not Noob Rama, have seen Mad Max.
Wow!
three boys. Why you gotta be so rude?
Out front of the podcast, we'll just say... Well, okay. I'll say I really, really, really fucking loved it, Mitch and Thurbs.
Do you want to go first, Thurbleton?
I don't know. Just
good.
Give us a quick one.
Yeah,
sentence.
We're just gonna put a little cap on it. Just like, hey, just 1 second review. But we will be talking about it probably with spoilers at the end of the show, we'll announce it. We'll
set up a
absolutely.
Siren.
Yeah. So at the very end of the show, we'll have like a segment. I have no idea how long it'll go. This is the Scotchcast. See. But we'll definitely be talking about the Mad Max in detail. But yeah, as a one sentence review, Thurbs, what would you say?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Mitch, one sentence?
It was okay, but I think it's overrated.
You both suck. All right, so we're going to have an interesting conversation at the end of the show, apparently. Because I'm the only one who actually has an accurate view of what this movie is like. Aside from that, Mitch, anything else you'd be doing?
Not video game included. Just a lot of work. I work as an educational assistant, so I've been bouncing around all over the place. But it's been a good week. Yeah,
nice. That's cool. Wait, so as an educational assistant, what do you actually do?
So I work in a behavior classroom for middle school. It's all boys, but it's not just middle school boys. And so I work with them. They all have varying learning disabilities like autism, ADD. In addition to emotional disorders. And so these are just people that couldn't really be in general education, and so they've been pulled out, and it's a kind of a more intensive classroom where they can kind of be in a safer environment where they're not going to put other students in danger. So,
man.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. They're good kids. They just have kind of the deck stacked against them in a couple of ways. So,
ah, cool. And so
humanitarian hero.
Well, I mean, you know, build houses, work with kids with learning disabilities. What can I say?
So you're one of the only real people in this podcast. Comrade,
wait, you work for the military.
I said one of the only.
Oh, okay.
I was open-ended. If you think you're a real person, you can consider yourself as such. I just won't give you any affirmation on the point. Terrible thing.
Wow.
What you been up to?
Out of the gate swinging.
Not much. I've been playing The Witcher 3.
That's a fucking video game. What is this?
Yeah. If there's nothing else, we can move on to video games.
I've also watched Mad Max, as previously stated.
We talk about the end of the show.
Other side stuff. No, I've been looking to build a shelf, but yeah, whatever.
Oh, wait, is it like a woodworking shelf?
Basically, I'm wanting to get rid of some stuff. Like there's a table I want to get out of my room and put in the garage, but in order to do that, I have to get rid of my roommate's stuff that is just like just single to double boxes that are stacked up covering up the garage. And so I had to make a shelf because they're lazy.
But are you planning to like make a shelf?
Yeah, it is the most, well, preferably with tools attached to my hands.
Will you have a plane?
Gripped by my hands.
Using a plane.
Will be using a plane?
Yeah, like a planing tool. Do you remember the survival video that Vinny did at the end of the year? The plane tool is the thing he pulled up at the end.
I'll probably not
like
be
a
using
flat surface with a single blade on it. Okay. So are you even like?
I probably just can use a handsaw.
and lots of
right angles.
Okay, yeah. So you're gonna cut wood into a rectangle, and then from there, kind of put together a shelf and maybe attach it to the wall.
This is gonna be freestanding. It's got cement walls. Oh. I don't know if you know, Portland is kind of hilly, kind of aggressively mm-hmm. hilly. Wouldn't you say so, Mitch?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. being in a valley next to a mountain. And so my garage is like practically underground. And so it's cement walls. I can't really attach anything to it.
Shit. It's you have to go far and wide to find anything underground in Sydney, in the Sydney, whole Sydney basin, really. Just straight up.
Well, I mean, it's all sand. It's Mad Max again.
Exactly. Yeah. And that would mean you probably want to go underground. So apparently we're just being really dumb about it and building above. We're just being really stubborn, like just in general. Like them in the fucking movie. Just dumb.
So how far away is Gas Town?
If you know the water's underground, just fucking dig. Anyway. Sorry?
I was just asking how far away you lived from Gas Town.
Oh, I'm on the outskirts. Say about a 15-minute, say, drive to... If I floor it the whole way, which is as you do in the post-apocalypse.
That's about like a quarter tank of gasoline to get there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you own sex slaves yourself? Can you confirm or deny it?
I cannot confirm or deny. I'm happy you gave me that out because I wouldn't have known otherwise how to answer that.
All right.
So, since we are all boring people...
I went to see a concert.
Ooh! Was it a Japanese concert with Japanese women?
No. I had the option to go to, like, a Japanese heavy metal idol concert, but I didn't do that with my friend because it cost too much money. The tickets were, like, $60, and it was at, like, a giant stadium. So, it's, like, crazy. It's, like, 14-year-old girls doing, like, heavy metal stuff.
This sounds like exactly
that
what
sounds
you
like my
do.
Demographic, but unfortunately, yes. My fucking probation officer does not agree that that's a thing I should be going and doing after what I've done to children. So
wow.
So you're going out with a friend.
Yeah, it was. I think we went. Like, I didn't really know the band personally, but he recommended it to me. So it was like Toro y Moi, which is like a rock band, hipster rock band. I don't know how to describe it.
Was it a band in rock band?
Pop. No, they're not that popular, or he's not that popular, I guess. But it was like, the problem was, like, we walked around for like a good 4 hours before the concert, and then the concert we just stood for like another 3 hours because like we got there a bit early, and then the opening show or the opener was fucking shit, and then we had to stand through that. And then by the time, you know, like the actual headliner came out, my legs were so fucking, or it wasn't even my legs, like my feet, because I was wearing Converse, because I'm a fucking idiot. So my feet were in such pain that I couldn't even focus on the music. I was too focused on just being like, I want to get the fuck out of here. But I felt it was rude to leave, so I just stood there, like, not really listening to any of the music in pain. So, yeah. Because I've only been to big concerts. It was, like, a small, like, music hall where it was a standing. But, like, most of the concerts I've been to, it's sitting. So, I fucked up. Clearly, I should have gone to the Baby Metal concert to see, like, Japanese people.
All right, so the one you actually saw, was that metal as well? Or was that just...
No, it wasn't. It was, like, indie pop. Maybe, like, synth pop. To be closer, something like that. Yeah, it was very hipster. God. It's super.
You made many mistakes.
I made many mistakes. The tickets were fucking dirt cheap though.
And of course they were.
Yeah,
because they're not to go to.
I mean, they're popular, sort of. There is like,
yeah,
like the demographic in that room were like white people with dreads. Like that was the.
That sounds about right.
The demographic. And like the big fucking glasses, but with no lenses on them, like glasses people wear.
Shut
as like
up. No,
I'm not fucking joking. I'm not fucking joking. I'm not fucking.
No one wears those.
No, I'm not.
Was this concert in Portland?
No, this was in Toronto at the Danforth Music Hall.
You know what? Aside from Portland, if I had to point to a hipster city, it would be Toronto.
No, it would be Austin way. And It'd then be Toronto.
Fucking, like Seattle.
Austin, really? I never.
From what I've heard,
Hmm.
The Rooster Teeth guys complain all the time. So.
I mean, it's like anywhere with like a huge middle class, you're gonna find hipsters, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But
yeah.
I don't know. Glasses without the actual gloss is like next level shit.
Okay, they were fucking comically huge, like you would get at a joke shop. It's not even, it was horrible. Everyone was wearing like denim jackets. I wanted to fucking kill myself. It was horrible. But it just, that's the kind of music.
I like how that was the line, denim jackets. Oh, God. Oh,
God, yeah. And combined with the glasses and the dreads, it just, yeah. And like the whitest people and the whitest Asian people is just crazy. I don't know.
Was the music any good?
Again, I was too focused on figuring out. Like, I was genuinely worried.
God. Wait, there's no sitting area at all. There's nowhere to sit.
No, it was only the floor. Like, you had to stand, and it just, the ground was obviously, it's just like cans of beer everywhere. Also, it's like scalping. I don't know if you've, like, I don't know what baseball is like in the States, and I don't know if there's like a similar thing with like cricket or rugby in Australia, but if you go to a baseball stadium to watch a game of baseball, like a bottle of water there, you on things, right? It's like $9 for a bottle of water. Like a can of beer was $10 at the show, and I just, my wallet just got burned on drinks. It's ridiculous. I hated it. It was the worst. But yeah, that happened. So that was my non-video game thing.
Nice. Yeah. Good, there you go. So the person with the actual story turned out to be Nibarama. Apparently just has no idea how to lead into it.
No,
moving on to video games. I guess, yeah, wait, all right. So Noob, you had a massive thing planned with the books you read leading into some random game you play.
So like I've been reading books about the Pacific War, right?
And yes, I think there's a reason I skipped over that part.
Yeah. But the last week I mentioned, you know, like I spent $90 on like a naval warfare simulation game. So
I don't even know if I'll give you extra shit this week. I have no idea.
No, wait. This is I hope this interests you because it's like in your general area of work. Like you do this for a living, kind of. But it's I don't know if any of you Americans have seen the movie from the 1980s called The Final Countdown. Have you guys seen it?
Where the Star Destroyer, not the Star Destroyer, where the aircraft carrier
goes back in time to Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I've seen it. Yes.
Yeah, it's like a dumb 80s blockbuster movie, right? But, so essentially like the premise of the movie is, it's I think it came out in 1980, but it's like a modern nuclear aircraft carrier. I think it was like the Nimitz or something, goes back in time to like, minutes before or like hours before the invasion or the attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941 against the Japanese fleet. And sort of like there's supposedly a battle at the end, but it gets canceled, so nothing really happens. And essentially in this $90 naval simulation game, you can like simulate any sort of battles with any ships, missiles, whatever, from like 1940 to modern day, or even 2020. So there's, on the forums for this game, there's like an after action report of someone who tried to totally simulate it. So they set up the entire attack on Pearl Harbor, and then they dropped like a Nimitz right beside it and see what, like, simulate. It like crashed his computer because there were hundreds of planes going around, but it was super interesting. So I spent like most of this week just dropping modern aircraft carriers and modern hardware back in time in World War II battles and seeing what happened and just watching it on a screen. And that's pretty cool. I don't know. Maybe I'm probably the only person who finds that cool, but yeah.
Yeah. You know, as the value, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if like how, like what sort of part of the Air Force you're in, but it's surprising how like planes from the 1940s fuck up planes from the 1980s. And it's also crazy that in 1975, you could fire a missile that if like the target suddenly disappears, the missile will on its own find a different target. Technology is crazy. It's
I can't recall who said it, but the quote was, a legion of Roman soldiers sure looks good, but they're no match for a guy with a flamethrower.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
But apparently, you know, if you have a lot of planes, like somehow Zeros from 1941 can dogfight and sometimes score hits on like F-14 Tomcats. It's fucking ridiculous. And they can dodge missiles and shoot them down. I don't know.
What?
Well, not shoot down the missiles, but yeah, the Zeros can maneuver away from like Sparrows and stuff like that. It's weird. I don't know.
Well, part of it is because those jets would, to engage them, have to slow all the way down.
Well, no, they're flying. So like the Japanese planes are like flying at 4,000 feet, and the Tomcats are going at about maybe 30,000. And then from 40 miles away, they'll launch their missiles that are like radar guided and fire and forget. Right. And then those missiles will just descend down on the Japanese fleet who don't have radar. So you have like the Mark One eyeball. You're just looking, they're just seeing missiles come out of the air, shooting down the planes. And half of the enjoyment is just imagining what would happen in that scenario. Just a Japanese fleet suddenly having their carrier sunk by missiles, TV guided missiles coming from the sky.
That's the scariest thing.
Yeah, it's scary. Of course. It's like, a you know, each of these carriers carry like 3,000 men, and a single one of these missiles would shoot, like, completely sink them, because they're like 1,000, you know, ton missiles or whatever, or 1,000 pounds, yeah.
You'd actually be surprised how small the explosion from 1,000 pounder is.
Oh, right, but the interesting thing is, like, of course, they're actually accurate, unlike, you know, dropping dumb bombs.
So, in the missile's memory, which has a impressive 4 megabytes of memory, it actually has a full 3D model of the ship that is going off. So actually, use that 3D model with orientation vectors. It can draw from its own sensors, and line up to where the storehouse would be for munitions. So essentially, we have databases of everything we know of everyone's ships, and essentially we target where we think, in the case where we don't know, or where we know the munitions disposal.
That's so scary. And this is like in 1970. They didn't have GPS for modern consumption. And I guess the coolest part was, it's the find out, you know, like, cause even jets, you know, in, unless they're on afterburners, they're cruising at what, like 0.7 Mach or something? Mach 7 or something? 0.7?
Yeah, so only a few jets have super cruise out there.
So, like, Zeros could actually dogfight. And I just saw, like, a report, because it just has a report of what's going on. It's just a single 10 round burst from a Zero, I guess, just hit the cockpit of an F-14 and it just
blew up. It is over. That's GG. Planes are really, really, like, there's a reason we're investing so much into stealth. Like, the F-35 is pretty much only good because it's got stealth. In many ways, it's just shitter than the F-18.
It's a very bad dogfighter.
Yeah, but it's got stealth capability, which is what you actually want. Because if optimally, you'd hold the midget at a distance and punch him in the face. Like, you wouldn't have a fair fight. You'd try to do best to not have a fair fight.
Just outrage. But, and I guess the interesting thing is, every single one of those missiles costs more than the Zero that it's aiming at, which is a very interesting thing. And it's not a 100% kill hit either. Like,
no.
So, yeah, no.
I'm not allowed to disclose the percentages I know. But it's, yeah.
Like, in the simulation, it was going at about maybe 75 at top, simply yeah. because they were such slow flyers at the same time. But it just, yeah, it's it's a very expensive thing to, you know, down an entire fleet, it's, even yeah. if they're World War II ships. And it's very interesting.
But it's also really interesting seeing how those missiles work. Like, for example, a Sidewinder missile and yeah. a...
Oh, those Sidewinders are fucking shit. I don't know yeah. if it's like that in real life, but they do not
fit well. They're not terrible in real life.
I mean, like, you don't want to be using your Sidewinders at any point in a combat.
Well, they're short-range missiles.
Right, exactly.
They're short-range missiles. Like, that's the point. Like, the ASRAM, which is the European-made thing that we use instead of the Sidewinder for many reasons, that is... on paper, a better weapon. I can't disclose percentages again, but it's so essentially, but the cool thing I was indicating is like the way we figured out how to blow up aircraft. So for example, a Sidewinder is fucking awesome because what it does is it kind of goes near the enemy aircraft, and inside the Sidewinder, you have the explosive charge, and around it, what you actually have is a cylinder, which is actually one continuous. Think of it as a string. It's like a lot of little pieces of metal that, when the explosion goes off, actually expand to become a large circle of metal.
Wow.
And so what it does is you go near an aircraft, explodes, and it literally cuts the aircraft in half. That's what a Sidewinder does. It's fucking cool.
That's
it's
brilliant.
Freaking
That's
cool.
brilliant.
Yeah. As opposed to like ASRAM, which does like the 3D modeling thing and tries to like... Targeted explosion and that kind of stuff.
But I mean, it is really inexpensive. I mean, I loaded some of my planes, I guess my A7 Corsairs, with dumb bombs. And those are just as inaccurate as World War II planes if you're dropping them at 10,000 feet. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Not much has changed.
So is that like the video gamey stuff you were talking about, those simulations?
That's one of it. Yeah, that's the final countdown. So if anyone has $90 and a decent CPU, like, yeah, spend it if you like things like this. but I guess the other thing is The Forest, which is like an early access survival now.
You've talked about that a couple times, haven't you?
Yeah, so I've been playing co-op again. It's on Unity 5 now. It looks really good.
What's wrong with those mutants, right?
Yes, it's super alpha. I mean, so me and my friend sort of like, you know, built our giant base. And the idea is like, it's supposed to question, you know, your deserted island with these mutants. Like, in reality, you're going around killing the mutants. Are you actually the bad guy here? And then we just took so much.
No, the mutants are the bad guys.
Well, not necessarily, because when they first encounter you, they won't attack. Like they'll fake attack you, but if you fight back, they'll like come and hunt you down. But we ended up getting to a point where we were just going around, you know, me and my friend, to their bases and murdering them for their teeth, so we can use it as upgrades for our axes, and just looking for a fight, you know, building effigies of like their ripped up brethren outside of their camps and things like that.
I retract my previous statement.
Entrapping Holy them for shit. Like their yeah, entrapping them for their body parts and things like that and their skulls so we could make lamps out of them. It's great. So if you want to
So you turn the tables, now the hunters have become
the hunters. And it's just sort of like going into caves. In the caves there are like fucked up monsters that will one hit you, but there are also mutant babies that you can light on fire and things like that. But essentially if you want to, you know, engage in mini genocide, this is pick up The Forest. It's alpha as fuck. I wouldn't recommend playing too much of it because there's not enough for you to really play for long periods because it is like 0.1 alpha. The interesting thing about this is one cool thing that the development studio is doing is they'll actually have a timer for when the next release is coming, like next full, like big release update wise. That's like every 2 weeks or something at the bottom of the main menu. So it's not like you're sort of like grappling for, oh, is this game getting updated regularly? So it's really interesting because a lot of early access games have floundered very badly. And for the most parts, I have made very bad investments in buying them very quickly. But so far, this game is looking good. And if you want like a short sort of, I wouldn't recommend playing co-op that much because it becomes really easy where you're just committing just like random acts of brutal violence on the mutants that are supposed to be so scary. But yeah, I mean, we just spent hours just building a wooden tower or something, but it's interesting. Yeah.
That's cool. I don't know. At some point, those games really come down to how much you can jive with the whole making your own fun.
Oh, thing. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
and, yeah.
The entire game is sort of like, you know, you're stranded on an island after a plane crash, and then the mutants are going around, you know, stringing up the victims of the plane crash, you know, their heads into effigies and things like that, and you're sort of supposed to fight back, right? And, yeah, it's sort of like, yeah, humanity accomplishes a lot. We just cut down, like, entire swaths of forests that the mutants used to call home and put torches and towers everywhere. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting. You can put traps where they're crushed by, like, just, like, this horrible, like, Vietnam War Viet Cong traps where, you know, they're getting crushed and, you know, stabbed by sticks. Very interesting. Yeah. It brings out, like, the inner psycho maybe a little bit.
Yeah. I'd say more than a little bit.
More than a little bit, probably.
I'm actually curious, like, it was originally billed as, like, it was a survival horror game.
Yeah.
Even in, like, single player, like, obviously co-op is kind of broken, but in single player, is it, like, does it scare at all? Or?
Well, at first, like, I was too fucking scared to play the game because, you know, it's sort of, the patrols, you know, they're very nocturnal. They're not completely nocturnal, but it's like the patrols come out at night and, like, in the distance, you'll be in your little tent and then you'll see a light and then it starts raining and then just, you know, lightning flash. This is, for me, the scariest part. And you just see silhouettes on, like, a hill, and then they start charging at you. And I think, like, later on in the game, you see giant mutants with, like, 8 arms that are conjoined or things like that that start breaking down your walls, so you're no longer safe in your little home. But you can start building countermeasures, like, you know, towers and explosives. So, I mean, there's quite a bit of longevity in that sense, where there's more build-up. But I mean, in terms of, like, things to do from the outset, it's still quite limited as an alpha, and it's very, very fucking buggy. So it's just sort of like hopping in once in a while to see how the games progress, more than like a consistent playthrough.
Nice.
Yeah,
I'm actually kind of curious, like, because we've had like the more PvP based open world survival games, like, you know, your DayZ and your H1Z1s. But there's a couple of, like, The Force is obviously one that's more horror-based, and I'm curious, I think Nautilus, that's the one that is predominantly just underwater.
Yes, and I think so.
Doesn't initially look like a horror game, but I don't know about you guys, I you know, have a, you know, deep-down fear of open water.
Oh, yeah.
I can kind of quell that, but, you know, it's like that. That game, to me, would seem like a horror game, especially with some of the monsters that you end up fighting later on.
Is it like a fear of, like, the sea and oceans in general, or is this, like, you being in them, or... Dan Reichert, from Zero to Dan Reichert, how much is this fear?
I don't know if it's Dan Reichert. I don't really have a fear of Dan Reichert.
Like, if you saw, like, the water at, like, the corner of your eye, would you freak out and have a nervous breakdown like Dan Reichert would with a wasp?
No, I'm not terrified of water. In fact, like, I grew up on a lake. It's that part is okay. It's right. The not having any safe point and just, like, trying to be okay with the fact that you are existing in this vast open space.
Oh, so, like, specifically for you, it would be, like, diving.
Like, you have no corner to run to.
Oh, you know what you need to play? There's a game coming out called The Kursk, which is based off of, like, a Russian sub sinking. And it's you're surviving on a sinking sub, and, like, spoilers, everybody died on the sub. But it's sort of like, you probably would like that, where it's sort of, it's a horror story where people survived, you know, hundreds of meters underwater for, like, 12 to 6 hours until their oxygen slowly ran out. Like, that seems like the game made for you, maybe, in terms of a horror story.
Jesus.
That's really grim, by the way, and I think the Russians are super angry because it's like Polish game devs making about it.
Oh, jeez, nice.
Yeah, but something like that. Also in Command, just going back really quick, they used to have fucking nuclear depth charges to rat out something.
Yeah,
that's a little bit overkill. They were like 100 kilotons of equivalent of TNT.
And explosions in water are fucked up. They do fucked up things, not only to like the thing you try to explode, but to like the environment and everything.
I had a B-52 drop a 1.2 megaton nuke on the Japanese surface fleet.
What?
And then it wiped out the entire surface fleet and the airplanes around it. So nukes are super effective in water. Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah, it's crazy. It just, and that was maybe 500 planes and maybe 10,000 people in that thing. That was crazy. Yeah. But technology is scary, folks.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just curious, like the topic of the open world horror games. Just I'm curious what else are going to come out of that vein. I remember hearing there's one that was like light based and the trailer had like 1950s esque music to it, but I don't think they've released it yet. Which is another good thing of just like the horror game. The idea of scaring someone, is that a good thing for early access?
Well, The Long Dark. I don't know if you guys know about it. This is survival.
One?
Yeah, this is a survival where there's no twist, there's no monsters, but it's you're literally surviving in the Canadian wilderness, but there are wolves and stuff like that. I found just staying in a cabin in the pitch black, because they also have ambient music, was scary on its own, where it's like the idea of surviving in the wild as horror more than, you know, like a monster hiding in the corner, right? I always just found games where you're exploring like solitarily. Those were scary for me. I don't know why.
So like without mist? Like weapons.
Yeah, mist. Yeah, that's a good example. Like mist for some reason. Like it could be bright as day outside, but something creeped me out about mist.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Were there any others that scared you? Like any other games that...
I'm a coward, so well, I get scared.
For Mitch was what I was trying to throw to.
Games that have scared me?
Or yeah, just like what game genre or like yeah, like what games have scared you or do you think would scare you if you decided to play them?
I mean, I didn't even think about it, but when I brought up Myst, I remember as a kid just being terrified. Oh, there was I'm sure you guys have all played Myst. There's like the level where you have to crank the generator and then go under like in the underwater base. And for whatever reason, that level I would have nightmares about for some reason. Yeah, I don't know what it was. Like that feeling, and then constantly feeling like you're being watched or something's going to jump out at you.
Just complete like solitary feeling in a place where clearly people have built a society in, right?
Exactly.
And then just empty. That's scary, yeah.
It's like it just kind of puts you off a little bit and it kind of freaks you out. Other than that, there haven't been any games that I've just been terrified in. Weirdly, I was playing, I don't know if this is like a random game that nobody... The Third Age, Lord of the Rings, The Third Age, which was essentially...
No, I haven't seen it.
It's like Final Fantasy, but with Lord of the Rings, like, B characters. So it wasn't so bad. But, like, just running around, and then you go into the Mines of Moria, and, like, the encounter becomes in the world. Like, instead of just stepping and then randomly being in the encounter, something, like, just charges up, and then you fight it. And so, like, just that... startling.
Oh, like a jump scare, yeah.
Almost, yeah. So that, I mean, other than that, I'm a coward.
But this is, like, the problem, like, just to put it in perspective, like, we are three cowards. We are people who don't play things like Slender. So.
Yeah.
There's definitely, like, a massive swath
yeah,
of stuff
like,
that would probably freak the
like,
shit out of
the reason I got, like, through my fear of the mutants is just because I was playing it co-op, and, like, yeah. I was definitely superior, you know? That's yeah, and also sure. Like the idea that oh the mutants can be conquered for their teeth and that was sort of hilarious to me. So yeah,
like honestly, if we did like this is another area where I really can't wait for VR because
oh man,
I really
because I'm okay waiting for VR when it comes to that.
No, not the mutants part because I would never play that.
No,
game,
but just
ever.
Horror games in general.
And not horror either. It's the other stuff, which is like
atmospheric kind of stuff.
Yeah, the atmospheric stuff. So I could see myself playing a game where you're just surviving in the Canadian winter and being scared enough just by wolves, because I don't need no fucking monsters. That'd be great. Like I could see myself doing that with Oculus. I wouldn't do it in my current state because I'd rather be playing something like The Witcher 3. But when it's actually like a fully immersive experience that makes you feel like you're there, that's different. That could be really interesting.
I think the scariest part is the feeling of helplessness. Thurbleton, I don't know if you remember, you showed me this video of kind of like, it was a game I think that was coming out, and the guy was running around and there was like just nothing around. It looked like free running almost, and then you're like, there's this robot that just starts chasing the guy, and he like can't fight it, so he just has to run. He's
yep,
like running and trying,
It's still
desperately to get away. Like, that looked freaky to me. Like, that feeling of just, like, I can't, I just have to run. Yep. Just have to get out.
That's by the makers of,
No, it's a new studio. It's like three people working out of their apartment in England. But it takes, it's Lunar Software, I think is the company. It takes place on like an abandoned or at least a derelict like moon base.
Yeah. Oh, okay. This isn't the space. And I think of the one with the space station. I think of the one which was made by the, not Machine for Pigs, the other one.
Amnesia
guys. Yeah. That's also like a derelict sci-fi kind of environment.
Yeah, it's Soma. I can't remember the company name.
But I also had that scene where you were chased down by like an android, didn't it? You know, I don't know. I like how everything's moving to sci-fi. I vastly prefer sci-fi too.
We're one step closer to cyberpunk future games.
Fuck yeah. That game's actually going to come out. We are actually in many ways one step closer to cyberpunk. So with that, so Noob Rama, that's what you've been playing. Anything else specific?
I've been going back to some Total War games because my computer can run it now. They're fantastic. I suggest, especially with the Warhammer Total War coming out. If I know a couple friends who've never played Total War games but like Warhammer, I think everyone should give the Total War series a try. They've aged quite well because they're strategy games, and most strategy games do age quite well. I tried to go in. Because I bought a bunch of like DCS World DLCs planes, which is like a flight simulator. Then I realized like I need to buy a fucking flight stick because it's really difficult to play without a flight stick. And yeah, so I've been going into like this weird simulation dive, which is pretty interesting. Yeah, that's about it.
Well, cool, nice. So Mitch. As you have the least overlap with me, I'll go to you, even though I kind of already know what you're going to say.
Go ahead, sorry.
Is anything interesting happening in the world of League of Legends? That's the question I have. Like, I know you've been playing LoL.
Okay. You know,
we give you crap for playing LoL because it is a game that is entertaining to you that you play and you have no interest to play anything else. And the reason we play all these other games, I'm not trying to bash it, is because we get different experiences and like interactions from various games. What I'm asking is, has anything new happened to League of Legends?
Wow. I'm not going to overtly say that you're wrong, but I'm just going to go ahead and backhandedly say, no, okay.
I mean, like, if you enjoy it, play it. If the shoe fits, wear it.
Yeah.
Honestly, I can definitely see why people love that game. I don't know if I've said
I can
this
also
before.
See why Japanese or people love Japanese porn games. Don't get me wrong, I can see why. But no,
having friends who play Dota, I know why you do it. And honestly, the only reason I don't play Dota is because I know that if I do, I'll probably just never stop playing Dota because I played Guild Wars fucking 1 PvP for like 2,000 hours.
Everyone looks down on everybody who plays MOBAs. Look down on
the top dog.
Yeah. It's the top dog. Yeah, it's a mix. There's a reason it's number one. It's accessible but also deep. But it's I respect League much like I do Nintendo. But also like Nintendo, I don't like it. So I apologize to everyone out there.
As the person who's been playing League out of all of us, we should probably let Mitch talk.
It's all right. No, this is fine. You guys can.
I just need to explain our positions. Well, at least my position. So go ahead.
I understand. I mean, to be honest, League earns a lot of the hate that it gets. It's definitely probably the most toxic community that I have ever been involved in. And I used to play Call of Duty on the Xbox, on Xbox Live.
I'm pretty sure we've had this disclaimer like every week for the last couple of weeks.
I'm identifying that. I'd like it a lot. I probably wouldn't like it as much if my friends didn't play. And we kind of all play different roles and different positions. So we have a team that we play. And so we're trying to constantly get better. And so, I mean, it's a lot of fun. I like watching the pros play. They're gearing up for the summer playoffs, which lead into the World Championship, which is kind of exciting.
So compared to the Dota World Championship, does League have a World Championship like Dota? Or is it more like there's leagues and there's many people?
There are kind of four, like the four major like leagues, I guess you could say, or divisions. there's North America, EU, China, and Korea. And then each league has 10 or so teams that play in the league. And then they have two seasons, essentially. So there's spring, which just ended, and then summer, which is going to start in the next week or so. And so then whoever is in first and second place at the end of both splits then goes to the world, like world playoffs. And so all of the leagues play against each other, and then it's kind of a round robin, or I guess a group system, like for the World Cup. And so then whoever's number one at the end of that then plays for the world championship.
So they're considered the actual, like, legit world champions of League of Legends, not like one of many groups of world champions, like in UFC, for example. It's just like the world champions.
The world champions. And it's not like in the United States where we play the Super Bowl and then whoever wins the Super Bowl is the world champion. So it's actually the world is competing.
Right. So that's sick. So it's essentially where on that timeline is it at now? Just starting the summer seasons?
So summer season is about to start. Spring ended about a month ago, I want to say. And then
the winners of that are in the pool? Is that how it works? Like the winners of the spring season are like in
the pool? It's like a point system. It's a little confusing. So first place from the spring split got like 90 points, I want to say, and second place got 50. And so the teams at the end of this next split, whoever's in first place gets 90 again, and then second place gets 50, and then whoever has the most points then goes to the world's playoff. So
wouldn't it like almost always just be the winner of each? Because I could. Is it frequently the case that you have the same two teams placing in top two both times? Like, does that ever happen? Or?
Yes and no. So, like, let's say one team, I mean, you guys don't know teams. So Team A wins, gets first place in the spring split, but then only gets third place.
Feel free to use their names because we can just make fun of them and have fun that way.
Okay. They're actually, let's say Cloud9 got second place. They got 50 points.
That's TSM a pretty good got name. First. I'll give you Cloud9. Wait, DSM? Does that stand for
TSM.
Something?
TSM. I don't think it sounds for anything. They got first place, so they got 90 points. But then let's say TSM gets third place in the summer split, which probably won't happen. And so they get zero. Then Cloud9 gets second place.
And they have 140.
Gets 100 points. And then a random team, like CLG, gets first place. 90 points.
So, then there'd be a tiebreaker. 90 points. Oh, so there is a tiebreaker. So there could be But so how does this work? So is this at a specific place? Like how do they manage pings? Like if there's a tiebreaker, is one team flown in or?
No. So they all are in LA during the season. Each team has their own team house, and then they play in a convention center in LA. I don't remember the name. It's not the Staples Center, but. So they all play, and so they sit. I don't know if you guys have seen like StarCraft being played. So they all sit next to each other, kind of a thing. So both teams are up on the stage, and then they also have refs that stand behind on the off chance that something gets messed up. Then they'll pause the game or reset the game, kind of a thing.
I guess one thing that is definitely different between that has League of Legends stand out in relation to the other ones is it like hire it. I don't know if they hire or if they're considered employees, but these champion like teams that Mitch is talking about are paid and like housed by Riot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so it's Riot... not the individual teams that own like pay for everything. It's Riot that actually.
Yes and no. Specific teams will get sponsors by like Razer or like whatever. And so then they'll have money and there's an owner of the team. But then they're all kind of under Riot, and Riot will help provide like the housing and like getting everybody in places. And then even like there are players that come from Korea or the EU to play here, and so there's like a couple of Korean players on pretty much every team, because they almost always win. So then Riot will help get them and like work with the visa process and stuff like that.
There's also like the I'm not sure how far Riot does in terms of like supporting, but there's also like esports like scholarships for colleges and stuff. It's League of Legends is definitely pioneering a lot of the craziness of this
nuts.
Future.
I didn't even know there was like wait what is it?
There are college teams.
There's a whole collegiate level of League of Legends now.
Shut up.
Yep. What? Yeah. So. Yep. There's like five or six college teams that all play against each other. and you can get scholarships to go to these schools and play.
That's insane.
League of Legends.
What?
Yeah.
What? Scholarships to college for League of... Oh.
Yeah. It's pretty. But it's pretty awesome.
Are they big schools, or are they like the tech nerdy kind of schools, or like?
I mean, like, I don't know if Harvard has a team, but like, it ranges.
Hmm.
Yeah, it ranges.
Nuts, man. So, yeah, it's, oh, I see. Because like personally, I see no difference between that and getting a scholarship for real sport.
Yeah, I would say they're both real sports.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. In many ways, I totally agree. Like the. I think that we need more words. I don't think that we should be calling these sports, because that just makes other people angry. And there's no reason to make other people angry. We may as well just have different words for things. But I can definitely see why you'd do that. I'm just surprised it's already gotten to that point. But also it's kind of weird because only some schools are doing it. So it's like, how is this a thing? Is this a bubble? Is League of Legends a bubble? Is my big question.
I think League itself could potentially be a bubble, but at the same time, Riot is constantly working on providing a balanced and diverse game. Anyway, they're constantly trying to like improve, like they continually release new champions, and there was actually just like a massive kind of overhaul this last season on how buffs and the entire jungle works. So they're constantly like making and improving on the game in pretty drastic ways, but I think the changes to like colleges and kind of the whole esports scene in general is definitely something that's going to stick around even after League of Legends kind of leaves and exits main stage. So I don't know when that'll be, but I'm sure there'll be another game that is way more popular. Like, I mean, it used to be StarCraft 2 that was like the big game, and now it's League of Legends. And so,
yeah, well, yeah, League and Dota specifically, but
well, I mean League, but
yeah, I mean, like, Dota is, like, on its own, especially compared to everything but League, has a lot of numbers, but anything compared to League is...
Yeah, just a juggernaut, yeah.
It's like trying to compare any MMO to WoW. It's kind of like, WoW wasn't the first MMO, but it's definitely the biggest. It'll be interesting to see when Blizzard's MOBA comes out at the end of the month, I want to say, Heroes of the Storm. If that's going to pull away people from League of Legends, because it's kind of League of Legends for babies, from what I've heard. So I haven't played it yet, but
that's cool.
Geographically, I guess I think a really good analogy is Dota 2 is England and League of Legends is America. And that, like, that works on multiple levels, especially since like the English colonization, that's Dota original.
Yeah.
Totally see it. Man, it's going to be seen. I don't honestly know enough to judge how Heroes of the Storm will do, but honestly, I don't think any. Your WoW analogy is probably apt in that there will be many challengers, but nothing will be WoW. I would be surprised if nothing ever gets to League of Legends size. And that's enough League of Legends for this week. I gave you more than you probably deserve.
Yeah, wow, that was very generous of you guys. I want to thank you for having me on.
Has there been anything else you've been playing this week, Mitch?
I've been dabbling around with The Witcher 3 coming out. I decided to actually start playing a Witcher game, so I loaded up Witcher 2, which has been interesting.
That's a good choice. So we'll talk about Witcher 3 in a bit, but. I guess, so what's your experience with Witcher? Are you just playing it because you heard about Witcher 3 and that it's good? Or have you read the books? Or where are you at with Witcher?
I have had almost no experience with The Witcher, except for I saw the Assassin's Creed Easter egg video, and I heard that there was a lot of sex. And so, I've kind of been completely ignorant of the series, not because I want to be, just because I haven't ever gotten around to playing it.
Yeah.
But I would really like, I'm looking forward to kind of getting into the lore, and like I want to read the books and just kind of dig in deep, because it seems like there's a lot there. So
how much of Witcher 2 have you played? So what have you done so far? Give us a rundown.
Not a whole lot. I did the tutorial and just kind of started poking around the world, like looking and seeing kind of how everything looks and feels. I definitely want to sit down when I kind of have a longer amount of time to look at it. This week was just not the week for that.
Right.
And so I'll probably definitely play it more in the week to come. But I did enough to kind of see whether or not I like how it handles and that kind of a thing.
Yeah. Have you played? I kind of want to get your background idea. Have you played any like Skyrim or any of the other like RPGs? Okay, so you're a Skyrim man.
Yeah, I'm a Skyrim guy. I played probably 200 hours maybe of Skyrim.
Nice.
So I've definitely. I mean, I'm well versed, and I played a bunch of RPGs. I know kind of the way around things and to not be completely stupid and to put all of your points in the wrong things and then immediately die. Honestly, I cut my teeth probably. I mean, on RPGs, it's weird, but I played a lot of like the Knights of the Old Republic games as a kid. So I put all of my points into like force powers and then got one shot by the final boss over and over again. So that was lame as a 13-year-old trying to be like, what? I don't understand. But so yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Well, so I guess that kind of leads me to what was your experience with Witcher 2? So you describe what you actually did, but if you with Witcher 2, like what were your observations that you made from playing it?
It definitely seems way like really deep. Like there seems to be a lot of systems, even just from looking at the beginning of the game when they're like use this and do that. And so I know it's like the kind of bare bones, like just getting me into the game, but I can already tell that it's going to be way deeper than some of the other RPGs that I've played, like even as like in Skyrim or Morrowind. Like those are deeper games, but at the same time they're like nowhere near kind of the level of things you can do and the person you can craft Geralt into being.
I'd actually say that it actually doesn't end up being that way. You think really? So when you first start playing it? Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. When you first start playing Witcher 2, you look at the skill tree and it's huge. And you look at the ways that it branches out. It's kind of crazy. But I guess this is a perspective I only gained recently from playing a bit of Witcher 3 and reading the first book. CD Projekt has a thing that they try to, they're like kind of walking a line where they're not ripping the books and putting it into games. Like the games are significantly different from the books. Geralt's character is way gruffer in the games, for example. He's more hard edge and like less empathic, or how you want to say
empathetic?
It? Empathetic, yeah. In the games, like in the books, he's actually a much nicer guy, for example.
Gotcha.
So, but one of those cases is the way that they actually do stick to the books pretty closely is how actually you can build out Geralt as a character. And you can definitely get him to the point where he uses science quite often and frequently. But you'll find that in The Witcher, you would never get the diversity that you could necessarily get in, for example, Skyrim. Like,
okay,
in Skyrim, you can spec into stealth magic, for example, or just magic pure, right. or just like within those three pods, there's sub pods as well. Like within magic, there's many schools, and you don't get that in The Witcher. Like you get your five signs, and they have their complexities to them, but there's no real like, there's no point where essentially for my first playthrough of Skyrim, I had a character that just two-fisted fireballs, and that's all he did.
Hell yeah!
First revision, like they'd be huge damage and knockback and massive AOE. Like I just spec one thing real hard and just essentially breathed through the rest of the game because it was broken. But you wouldn't necessarily, like you could get that level of specificity with The Witcher. But you could. It's not like you're picking that one option from 100. You're picking that one option from like 5.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, but yeah, go on. So, how do you like the world so far from The Witcher?
It's good. I played like a 10, 15, 30 minutes of it just kind of get through the tutorial, and then I immediately jumped on YouTube and just started like watching lore videos to try and like understand this world. Because I was like, I just want to know everything, kind of a thing. And so it's definitely been interesting. It's left me wanting to read the books. Would you recommend I do that before I continue playing? Or you said it was different, so
yeah. So it's definitely a case where having watched all of Witcher 2 and played a bit of it, I actually haven't seen Witcher 1 at all, so I can't speak to Witcher 1. But going off Vinny Caravella, so GiantBomb.com is Vinny Caravella, and his assessment of Witcher 1. Witcher 1 seems to be a much of a side story. Witcher 2 is a little bit closer to the books and makes some references to the books, but doesn't really go into it at all. And 3 is the only one where it's actually for the first time ever, really delving into what the books are actually about. With talking about Yennefer and Ciri and his relationships with them and the Witcher manner and how they raised Ciri and all that kind of stuff like that. All that kind of stuff is not even brought up for the most case in Witcher 2. So in reality, you could just play Witcher 3 and be closer to the books. Or you could read the books and just have like a different perspective on all of it. But note that they do diverge from the books in many cases. So Vinny, for example, again, just said he started getting confused because he kept forgetting what happened in the books versus what happened in the games. So honestly, if you're just playing Witcher 3, yeah, read the books. But if you want to play all of them, I would say probably read the books after you finish playing the games or something along those lines.
Gotcha. And you can do the thing where you load in your character from the previous game, right?
Yeah, which means like if you make horrible mistakes and have, for example, a specific tattoo, you still have that in Witcher 3 if you load it up.
Gotcha. It's really
funny. Yeah. Or you can simulate. Like for me, I'm playing on my PC. I didn't actually play Witcher 2. I just watched it. Aside from like the couple of hours I played, but I didn't finish Witcher 2. So you can simulate the Witcher 2 save, which means they at the start, like Mass Effect, they ask you a bunch of questions and you can kind of answer.
That's cool. Yeah. So you can kind of have an imported character, but not actually import the character.
Exactly. That's cool. Since you're still playing Geralt, it's not like you're. Yeah, it's not like you're doing the Mass Effect thing where you're literally reforging Shepard and you can make him like a fucking entirely different person every game. Like you can do.
Right.
You can make it pretty contiguous. Anything else? So that's our Witcher 2 moment. We'll talk about Witcher 3 probably at the end here. Anything else, Finch?
I also looked at Besieged again. Conrad showed me the video of it, and so I went back. I went and immediately bought it because it looked like a lot of fun, and so I just been tinkering around after looking at Reddit and seeing the absolute ridiculous things that people have made. I wanted to try my hand at it. And I wanted to do the, you kind of start with the machine and you just add on to it and you just have little one machine for the entire game. And so I managed to succeed and make my way through the game. So
break down Besieged for the people, because I actually haven't talked about it on the show before, I don't think. Or if we did, it was only for a short period of time. What is Besieged?
So Besieged is, I guess it's like the world's greatest machine or something like that, an older game. You're given a task, and then you're given a bunch of pieces that do different things, and you have to build a machine to complete the task. And they're all kind of medieval, like siege themes. So destroy the village, or kill X number of sheep, or move this rock from this place to that place, or so on and so forth. And so your job is to within the confines of like a certain area, make a machine to do it. But then people, of course, have gone the internet route and done completely absurd things. Somebody built like a Ferris wheel for all the different knights, so it'd pick up the knights and then spin them in a circle and turn into a Ferris wheel. It was spectacular. So
cool. So essentially, it's somewhat like Banjo-Kazooie nuts and bolts. And there's this quickly this on the Giant Bomb website. So essentially, I didn't know this part of it. So you only get one machine? Like, is that how that works? Or is it, like, do you redesign every level, or do you just to make one?
You can redesign every level, but every time you go to the next level, your machine from the last level is just automatically loaded in. If you want to, you can delete it and make a completely new machine from scratch. Or I wanted to just, instead of doing that, make a machine that I could kind of have pieces and parts that and just became this ginormous death trap / catapult thing that could also pick up rocks and scoop up villagers and
no way.
So, yeah, it was pretty cool. By the end of it just looked absolutely ridiculous. So
but you could make one machine that could accomplish any of the tasks. Is that essentially what you did? That's nuts. Oh, that's cool. I didn't even consider that. That's fucking cool. All right. That actually seems like a way more challenging thing than trying to design individual machines for each task. That sounds fun. But also there's the other side of it where you can like this whole idea of like trying to make the most efficient machine. I assume there's like time-based scoring or something along those lines or anything like that, or
not that I remember. There could be, and I just completely was ignorant to it, but for the most part you could go about things in the completely wrong way. Like there was this one where you had to like move rocks, and so instead of putting grabbers on my machine, I just put a bunch of cannons and like saw blades and just tried to like bludgeon / shoot the rocks into the right spot.
Nice.
So yeah, you can kind of do whatever you want to complete the goal. But I guess the idea is to use as few pieces as possible. But you don't have, say, a budget where you can every piece costs X amount of dollars and you only get so many dollars per mission. So you could hypothetically just build this monstrosity of things. So
nice. That sounds sweet. Cool. All right. So I guess we'll move on then to Thurbleton.
Hello.
What you been up to? What you been up to?
Been up to a couple things. Chief, among them, a couple of friends who I used to play DayZ with have been playing Counter-Strike Global Offensive, and they dragged me in a couple of times to play the game. It's been out for a couple of years and all that. I still prefer the Counter-Strike Source in terms of just enjoying playing it, but it's beginning to get more and more just it's getting more and more hackery and less maintenance, and all the all the people I regularly play with just don't play it anymore. I will say, in regards to just Counter-Strike in general, the reason why I remembered it was Mitch talking about how League has the most toxic internet community. Counter-Strike has a quality of toxicity to it that I don't think many other games have. It's this weird mix of just like being complete dirtbags toxic, but also being self-aware of it.
What? And
I was reminded of it by there was a Twitch viewer who I'm not exactly sure how I followed them. I just ended up just like, oh, hey, they're streaming Counter-Strike. I'll watch it for a little bit. And then just like the dialogue of it is, it's kind of impressive. It's entertaining, but at the same time, depressing. That's just like, this is an actual conversation that is happening amongst people in a game, and yet they're all okay with it. It's like its own dialect of English.
Can you give us an example?
Yeah. I don't know, because I assume it's hard to, in some cases, repeat it on.
Yeah, it is hard to repeat, but like, just know that like, dicks was a common term.
Of course, you know
and
what?
The application of said dick.
Oh, I see. Oh.
Yeah. Anyway, I just reminded of that. That's not the main thing I've been playing. Main thing I've been playing was Witcher 3, but we'll again get to that in a little bit. Another game I'm playing that actually prior to Brad playing it on Unprofessional Fridays on GiantBomb.com was Agario, or AGAR.io. Right. And that it's – I don't think I enjoy the game. I don't think I'll be going back to play it anymore. It's kind of fascinating, and it does grip you. And then while it has you, an enjoyable and terrible experience. Basically, what the premise is like you start off in your little circle, a little a ball, and you go around and in Katamari Damacy esque fashion, like the smaller anything 10% or 90% or smaller than you. So let's say you have a size 100, anything that's 90 or below, you will consume and get like you'll grow in size.
Huh.
And there are both little, sprinkles of just generated things for you to grow in, as well as other players of various sizes.
Right. Yep.
And, I think there's a cap, or at least, the larger in size you get, the faster you degrade without actively eating anything. So it sort of caps off at a certain height. But, yeah, it's just this dog-eat-dog world. And there's various ways to, you can split in half, and the smaller you are, the faster you go. But it's this kind of mad, bedlam game of you work your way up to being a middle class, ball, and then trying to get to the big leagues, getting on the top 10 leaderboard. But then as soon as you get to the top, there's nothing you can do other than wait to be knocked off the throne.
Yeah. So why am I seeing pictures of, all right, okay. I don't want to offend anyone at home. This is just what I'm seeing on Google. There's a picture of a little ball with Holocaust on it, slowly enveloping a picture of a ball with the Jews on it. And Why?
So the developers have decided, based on community input as well as, I guess, their own interests, I guess. I'm not saying that the people who make this game are interested in the Nazi Party. I'm just saying that it's the internet. Have allowed certain keywords like CIA, Doge, Earth, and yes, Nazis, and I guess apparently Jews. Certain keywords will basically make your ball a image, like a circular image. So, like, the Earth is the Earth. CIA is, I think, like some black sunglasses over whatever color you are. For everyone else, you're just a generic color.
Right.
And you can choose when playing. There's settings where you can disable that if you are offended by it or whatever. But it's the internet. People can choose whatever name they want, and so they will pick super offensive names sometimes.
I'm seeing NASA slowly overtake Japan. This is funny.
Yeah, and the other really entertaining part about this is it is a browser game. And you can, I think you have to get a Chrome extension for it, but you can like play in an organized fashion with friends. And so one of the reasons why this has exploded in the internet culture is streamers will play it with their viewers.
Ah, I see. Okay.
It's an entertaining game. I definitely recommend any people check it out, especially because it's free. It just takes your time. it takes your time. There, like, this weird thing where like you are compelled to play it. Like, what it's you get taken off the leaderboard or you get consumed. And it's like, all right, well, it's one more go.
Right. That's crazy.
But yeah, it's this weird game. I don't know. Nice. Talk about other stuff I've been playing, but I've talked about I'm playing Spelunky again and been playing Payday 2.
Right.
But
cool.
I've talked about those in the past.
So I need to talk about one thing before we talk about The Witcher 3. Specifically, who else here was aware of the PlayStation exclusive and produced TV show starring not only, none other than District 9's Charlton Copley as the main character? Fucking Powers.
I was unaware of this.
What is this?
So just so people at home and you guys, I invite you just to Google Powers. It's a TV series that's marked as 2015 onwards. Last year, it's not a Marvel Comics movie. It's actually just entirely placed it.
It's an adaptation of a Marvel Comics.
Is it actually?
It's Icon Comics, which is a part of Marvel Comics.
Oh, okay, right. Oh, okay. That makes more sense to me than Core. Because, you know, Marvel like owns many like branch studios. And, sure. So that makes even more sense because it was announced by in this weird segment of the Sony press conference. It was either last year or the year before that, where like an old dude came on stage and talked about their like cross media bullshit, and everyone was like, "God, please get off the stage, show us some video games." And so I kind of dismissed it because like first and foremost, it's a TV show being fucking produced by a console manufacturer, in tandem with like an independent, or not independent, but like a subsidiary of Marvel, so like a small comics group. But the weird thing was, it stars fucking Charlton Copley, who I'm a huge fanboy of because he's amazing in everything he does, ever. So it's weird. I actually have you guys seen Heroes?
I've seen Heroes.
Yeah. I've heard of Heroes. Yes, I've seen an episode or two.
So this is not that. I was expecting this to be a shitty knockoff of Heroes and to just be bad. Now, whether it's bad or not is arguable, but it is not a shitty knockoff of Heroes. It is actually like a really interesting little thing where we're in a world where suddenly people have like a small subset of humanity get superpowers. And it's kind of spreading, like more and more people being born or discovering the fact that they have superpowers. There's no real like thing in the sky or like massive event that triggered this to happen that we know of.
Maybe like a mutation in the human genome, like they're all becoming, you know, mutants.
Exactly. And it just seems to just be a fact of this world. But it started in like the 80s or 70s. So in the 70s, there is essentially this group of superheroes of which like just kind of made a superhero like kind of posse and went around doing superhero shit. And then one of them loses his powers because another person in the group turns. So you're following Sheldon Copley, playing his character, and he's essentially now working for the equivalent of the police force, except they're in the powers division. So they actually, their job is as normal people, none of them are powers, and superheroes are called powers in this world, just to make it obvious. None of them are powers. So essentially, normal people trying to take down fucking superheroes. Which is kind of crazy because you'd think it would just be this weird, like, David and Goliath weird thing, and, like, you'd think it all be very formulaic, but the plot goes in really interesting directions. And if you put aside the fact that it's got really terrible graphics and kind of questionable acting, it's actually really good. That's the long and short of it. Watch Powers. If you're interested in seeing, like, an odd, like, kind of sideways look and what superhero, like, a world of superheroes in it would be like, where superheroes are actually real people and have real people problems, and, like, they're having, like, celebrity problems where, like, they're sick of the fact that everyone recognizes them for being a superhero and being approached and shit, and they, like, young people, it doesn't matter how powerful you are, really. It just matters how famous you are, because essentially that gets you, like, advertising contracts and shit. And because, like part of the thing of this world is, like, you don't get paid for being a superhero. In fact, you usually just get sued for being a superhero. So, like, really what you want is to be seen doing something famous, go viral, and then get ad sponsorships so you can live a pretty, like, luxurious life over the fact that you can do all this superhero shit. And there's these inverted commas super villains who are, like, essentially just being paid to rock up to start, like, a superhero's, like, like, book signing or whatever, and attack and be beaten up, and then, like, that kind of shit. So it's, like, this all, like, weird, like, celebrity status, like, Hollywoodized mix of that plus superheroes. That's just really interesting. And they should really do a pretty good job, especially with the main character, because he's again, a superhero, lost his powers. So he's, like, dealing with that in kind of interesting ways. Like, his ex-girlfriend is still a superhero and he wants to get with her, but she's... And then you have this whole movement about, like, humanity's finally getting sick of all these people with superpowers, which would inevitably happen if a subset of humanity starts becoming more powerful. Like, it's just, it's really cool. And one of the chicks is really hot. Her name's Alessia Reed-Lynn. So there you go.
Sold.
That's it. Sold. No, honestly, out there, like, if you have a PlayStation 4 in America and you have PlayStation Plus, you can watch it for free. If you don't have a PlayStation 4 in America, then I think in the UK it's coming to you guys soon, or you can be like me and acquire it by all the means, which is kind of annoying. Like, honestly, the only reason it's not here is because they're having weird problems putting it on our PlayStation Plus server. I'm not a PlayStation Plus subscriber, so fuck it. So yeah, but aside from that, Durbleton.
Mm-hmm.
We've been playing a video game.
Yes, we have. Not together, just at, you know, at the same time, individually.
Yeah. Yes. In our rooms, alone, in the darkness. God.
Yeah, I had a window open. It was the daytime.
How many hours have you played The Witcher 3, 4?
I don't know. I mean, like, I want to say close to 10, but sub 10.
Okay.
So two things I have beef with on the PlayStation system. The first one, you might be able to tell me I'm just an idiot and not doing it right. Is there a way to see how many hours you've been playing a game?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
But if when you save on The Witcher, it says at the bottom left-hand corner.
That's true. I could look it up that way. The other thing, just quick rant, soapbox moment of PlayStation system. Why the crap do I not have a wish list function?
That's an interesting point.
Being able to, like, buy a gift and, like, buy a game and send it to a friend.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's such a smart way for Steam to
as convoluted, like, I really regret not, like, jumping on during the Big Live Show live when Adam Boys and John Drake were on, like, the subscriber yeah, thing. Because I totally would have asked them, like, hey, seriously, why no wish list? Because you'd be making bank on that.
Yes. Like, that's the point. Like, Amazon and everyone else has discovered this ages ago. Like, if you have a wish list, you get a free license to remind people that they want to be buying things from you.
It's basically so, people could, like, when they're looking through the PlayStation Store, the convoluted, cryptic, super hard to find games PlayStation Store, they could just wish list it, and then when they have money, they could buy it.
So with you're playing The Witcher on PS4. Do you have it on disc, or did you end up getting it from the
store? I got it on disc. And actually, like, the reason why I got it on, well, partially the reason why I got it on disc is because I work at a place that sells it, and I can get a discount with that. But the other thing is, like, especially with Bloodborne, I have yet to do this, but I like that it is an option in which I can do it. Mm-hmm. The speedrunning community, like, is basically running off the 1.0 version. The disc version. So anybody who wants to speedrun it and bought a digital copy is SOL.
Yeah.
At least on console. I'm sure there's a PlayStation, or it's not on. It's not on PC. Keep forgetting.
No, it's not.
Bloodborne.
It's a PlayStation game. Yeah, yeah.
So
that's true. Like, essentially, you have a permanent version of that game always with you.
Yeah, and with the digital ones, you can't roll back to a previous version. Like, you will just download the most recent version, and
you get the patches automatically and all that kind of stuff.
So I guess in that one respect, there is still a benefit to having the disc.
Yeah, but we should know that there is part of the Bloodborne community that tries to speedrun on the latest version.
Yes.
But yeah,
that is true.
Yeah.
But the cool glitches are on.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, jumping over random shit you shouldn't be able to jump over and getting to, like, the last area of the game really quickly. Like, that stuff you can't do on the new versions, but you can.
But also duping the game to get a ton of money.
Yeah.
Which is something I may or may not have done in The Witcher 3.
Ah, okay. So, how has your experience been with Witcher? Describe for me your time with The Witcher.
I guess try not to go into spoiler territory. Sure. I will say if I drop anything, but the writing is super impressive. Like, having not played one or two or read any of the books, the writers are able to tie in just, like, issues that are prevalent in real world society.
Yeah.
To being, like, the systemic issues of each zone. I know.
Like, it's...
I guess this is, like... Oh,
People's problems in Skyrim are, like, fucking hell gates are opening and crazy shit's going off.
That's oblivion.
Like, okay, no, like, that is the common issue. Like, yes, there are, like, you know... You walk 50 feet away from your house and there's some, like, bog monster by the water ready to pull you down into it. However, the reason why your, like, house is burned down and like, destroyed is because the Baron who is supposed to take care of it is super depressed because his son turned out, like, I don't want to drop any spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers. But, like, another example is, like...
Like, alcoholism is one of the things that wrecks an entire zone.
Yeah. Or just, like, straight up.
It's like Soviet Russia.
Yeah. Like,
no, like, one guy getting, like, basically being a border... Like, an alcoholic who beats his wife is something that has ramifications, like, down the line that affects 24 people. And it's an MMO, or it's an RPG world. So 24 people equates to, like, 3 villages.
Yeah, it's freaking great, but, like, that's one example. Like, another example of which we can, like, fully disclose, because, like, at the very start of the game is, again, like, you have this, like, little town that's being ravaged by, like, monsters and harpies and shit, sure. But they're, like, in the woods and shit. In the town, there's not, like, monsters, like, fucking, like, attacking the town itself. But a house burns down. And why does the house burn down? Because of fucking racism. It's really fucking cool. It's the whole, like, oh, there's the dwarf in the town, and he's helping out the Nilfgaardians, and for one, he's a dwarf, and two, he's helping out the Nilfgaardians, so he's extra
He's probably helping out the Nilfgaardians. The Nilfgaardians are paying him fat dollar. Turns out he's conscripted to do it because he's the only blacksmith.
Absolutely.
Because fucking BioWare games, totally. Like, they fucking ham-fist that shit really badly.
It doesn't seem like it's ham-fisted because you have to go out of your way to find it. Okay. Like, dwarf one, yes, that's, like, right in front, but... A lot of this other stuff, if you mainline the quest and if you you have to choose the dialogue options. You have to be invested and know, like, hey, why are you doing this? Like, why is this happening?
Exactly. Like, it's how it works is, like, you have, when you talk to someone, you have the yellow dialogue option, which is, hey, click this if you want to get to the thing you wanted to talk to this person in the first place for. Then you have a bunch of white dialogue options usually below it. And that is like, hey, do you want to know any more information? And in a BioWare game, it's kind of a case of, like, you're talking to someone and you just go through all the fucking options because, of course, you do. because you can click through them and go whatever. In this case, like sometimes like you have like a million quests going on. Like note that in Mass Effect, the most you'd have is maybe like 3 or 4 side quests going on. In The Witcher, it's not surprising to have like 20 to 30 fucking side quests just sitting there waiting right. to be done. And so you're like, okay, sometimes you're just like, yeah, I just want to fucking move on. Just give me the information I want, right? But if you do sit there and go into the other dialogue options, you actually can get to the point. Like, for example, again, that blacksmith, we can fully disclose because it's the start of the game. You can talk to him about why you're talking to him, which is just some shit's happening in the town. You want to know about it. And you want a blacksmith to repair your shit because shit breaks in Witcher. But if you actually talk to him, it's like, hey, you can bring up, hey, it's a wider dialogue option. So it's entirely optional. You go, hey, your house is burned down. It's like, yes, my house is burned down. This is why. Because we moved in and like the fucking guys took over. And before that, everything was fine because I was like the only blacksmith in town and I did everyone's fixing. And he goes to all that kind of stuff. And only if you actually feel that investment, it never tells you that you'll get a quest. It gives some people who have an exclamation mark over their head, but many other cases it doesn't. You can actually just go down the dialogue options and go, hey, yeah, I'll help you with this. I'll find the person who burned down your house and shit. And the person you find, he isn't like just some asshole who's like, fucking dwarves. He's like just a dude who's recovering from a hangover. And he's like, oh, fuck, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have done that. I wouldn't. It was a massive mistake. And at no point is it ham-fisted. Even though in some cases it gives you, like, hey, this is a side quest. I don't think at any point in The Witcher have I seen something that's like ludicrously ham-fisted.
I mean, the one thing that is ham-fisted is the one thing I said of the alcoholism, just because the guy will not shut up about it. Like, oh, it's my fault because beat my wife. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of your fault.
Yeah. But yeah, I love how some of the dialogue options are like, yeah, you fucking beat your wife. This is what yeah, happens.
There is some advantages about playing a character who has just no emotion.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. Like, yeah, so in many cases, The Witcher has some pretty great, because you get a sense, because you are role-playing to some extent, because you can kind of judge the tone that he answers a question with or proceeds a conversation with Geralt. But the cool thing is, no matter what answer you choose, they're always within that spectrum, and that spectrum is Geralt. It's not you. It's not like Mass Effect where you can go like full rogue or full like hero mode. Both options are things Geralt would maybe say, and so you're picking the one or the two or the three or whatever that you actually think he would do. And so you always get like this very like Geralt way of executing the thing you want him to execute. So, like, in the case of saying a dude like got what he deserved for beating his wife, like, he's like full bitter when he says it. Like, he just like cuts the dude down. Or if he like goes sympathetic, he's not like, oh, it's okay, it was a mistake, you'll get over it. It's like one sentence. It's like, I see.
All right. Like, well, you didn't burn down the whole village. Way to go.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just continually shocked by like how well the writing's done in The Witcher. And I think, yeah, and Brad brings up like really good points where you go into a house and if it's a herbalist, there's herbs everywhere. But it doesn't look like, sure, there's like paintings and shit, but it doesn't look overdone. But it also looks like, hey, this is a house where a herbalist would live. So it really does walk that fine line between overstating and understating, in that it delivers, everywhere I've been so far, delivers the intended information without ever being like overbearing, to such a way that it just makes the world feel that extra level of like real.
Like, it feels it feels like a well-crafted world, whereas
yes.
Like granted, I've not played thousands of hours of Skyrim. I haven't done like any of the mods or anything. I basically played a dozen hours or so and then just felt it wasn't for me. And like, it Skyrim is a world where like points of light in a dark dark plane, whereas there's always something going on in Witcher.
Yeah, like it's In Skyrim, it feels like if you go to that question mark, there'll be this whole like wonderfully crafted, beautiful little thing you'll find in that question mark area of the map.
But then it's the from A to B point. There's really not much of anything.
Like, even though the question marks are dense, like there's just wilderness between here and there. In The Witcher, it's like that dude is drunk, so this whole area is like being affected, and everyone you see in this area is being affected in some way or shape or form, or the fact that like
it's like you like you'll get a bounty or a contract or whatever to go to some place, and you can take the road, and actually along the road you might come across like, you know, some bandits that are like holding up a bridge that you can kill, you can walk away from and go around, you can try and use your tricks of the mind to make them just, you know, not bother you.
Or you can just go, hey, look at this fucking thing around my neck, I'm a witcher, and they usually go, oh fuck, and just fucking bolt.
Or you can just like go straight through the woods, and you will come across stuff in the woods, which is something that like if
massive
I did
roving packs of wolves.
Yes,
which
or,
is fun,
or just a bear who is chilling on treasure. Like it feels almost like a GTA game, were it not, where it's in a medieval times. So. Yeah. Like there are like just random thing, like random events happening in the world that sometimes tell a story, and other times are just like they're there for your entertainment. But it's that they put stuff there that is interesting.
Yeah, I think that the major difference that we need to draw here, and what I was trying to say before, is that, and what you were trying to say as well, is like Skyrim feels like a lot of different things in one world.
Yeah, I'm not trying to knock Skyrim. Skyrim is an amazing game.
It is an amazing game. But this is not Skyrim. It feels like one world where the events that are created within it are just parts of that world. It's like, there's a shipwreck in the distance. There's an event tied to that shipwreck. If you go to the shipwreck, you'll probably find treasure. But that shipwreck is there because this place just got taken over from the Guardians, and these people have like a small resistance movement, so you can like go up shore and you'll find a body that's like come up against shore, and on it will be a note talking about like what the dude did and like how the Freedom Force are fighting and how they sank a ship last week and all that kind of stuff. It's nuts, man. Yeah.
Is it procedurally generated, or is it kind of all the same regardless of your playthrough?
The Witcher, it is a singly crafted world. It is like
100% crafted.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it feels that way. Every part of it feels like it was handcrafted. It is.
Dang.
It's insane. A good way to describe it would be, again, it kind of went into the Bombcast, but like, I think it was the Bombcast, where the first area, you're like, holy shit, this is like of the size of an area in Dragon Age Inquisition, maybe a bit bigger, actually. And there's so much shit to do here. Like, there's towns, there's people you can talk to, and there's like all these sights to see, and like you can swim and dive underwater in places and shit. And that whole area took me like 8 hours to complete, like just straight up, like just doing every side quest, going to every question mark on the map, and just like discovering shit. And then you're like, holy shit, that's like a massive part of a game. And then you get to the second area of the game, and it's like fucking 16 times as large. And you're like, what the fuck? I don't even know where to start. And then you're just sitting there going, holy cow, there's like 5 to 7 job boards. Each, you know, will probably have like contracts on it for monsters or people with problems that need help, or just like, and just getting between where you are and that fucking job board will probably like have all these other things popping off on the way. It's just crazy. Like the amount of stuff in this game is crazy, but the fact that it's all really well written and contiguous, and it looks... You know what? This is a good time to talk about how it looks, because we've gone to the story and that kind of stuff.
Graphics for Cynic. At it again.
How does it look on your new TV, Cynic?
I didn't get it. I ended up playing it on my parents' 55-inch for a bit instead. And because I kind of want to wait for OLED, which is the 7,000 TV coming out later this year. I'll probably do that. Anyways. Yeah, but we'll see. I kind of want to get Thurbleton's actually thoughts on this first. So how do you think, like, you're not a graphics whore. Like, out of the two of us, Thurbleton, I'm the graphics whore.
Yes.
What's your stance on how The Witcher looks? Were you impressed, first and foremost?
I mean, like, it looks good. Like, the things that, like, because the detail of an image is not what impresses me, it's more, like what Firewatch is doing, like that. Those graphics look really good, only because like it is a It's more artistic looking. Like they aren't going for realism. They're going for a style. It's got the best style. I enjoy the graphics. I like the, like, it's a nice level of detail. Like the way Nilfgaard looks, I like how it, I think this is probably because it's a Polish, Eastern European developed game. It doesn't look like a generic medieval world to me. Like the city doesn't look, it looks medieval set, but it just looks different. It looks like I enjoy the style. And I like how each major city has a different feel to it, mainly just like the banners and all that. I don't know. I enjoy it. I'm not a graphics whore, so I can't. Oh, the anti-aliasing is great.
So you're playing a PS4. I've heard it. So for people out there, I actually do think, having seen some of the footage from those consoles, that it actually doesn't look too bad. I didn't knock anyone for playing that on PS4. Runs at 30, right? Like, I have any frame rate problems so far? Or?
Not really.
Yeah. So it seems like it essentially is equivalent to maybe somewhere between medium and high for a PC. And the fact that you're running that off like a $400 console versus buying like a $400 to $500 graphics card for your PC, I think it's actually a pretty good value proposition. In the case of the PCs, I am playing on a PC. I'm running a R9 290, so AMD R9 290 in my computer. So running it at 1080p with almost everything set to ultra, hair work off, but some like the foliage distance set one tick down from so high. Just because I didn't really notice much difference between high and ultra when I switched between the two. So as a person who's pretty much almost running it all in ultra, I can say that The Witcher 3 actually, for me, doesn't look as good as people are wanting it to look. Like I don't see it. Like I think it's a beautiful game. I think that when I'm playing The Witcher, like the graphics are good enough to the point where they're like a non-issue. But I thought the same about Bloodborne. And like, it's one of those things where at some point graphics, I agree, stop mattering, but I was expecting more wow from The Witcher. Like, some parts of The Witcher look like Skyrim, but with a HD texture pack on it. And that's it. That's the level of quality you're looking at getting. Like, there's nothing particularly wow-inducing about it. But then the other side of that is when it's raining at night and there's lightning in the distance and shit, like, again, like, you don't see any of that technical quality stuff. You just see a really beautifully rendered world. And the fact that the draw distance is pretty damn large, like, it could be larger, and in the pre-release footage it was, so, but I don't want to get into the whole, like, graphical.
There'll be a mod for you, I'm sure, that makes it look pretty.
Yeah, like, I think it is probably the best looking open world game out there. Probably. I would say. Almost without doubt. I can't think of, like, even Skyrim with HD texture packs doesn't look as good as this game in many cases. Especially with the fact that, like, the best part of this game is seeing it run. Like, the fact that you can just get on your horse and just ride and just go through foliage and go through, like, a fucking forest that feels like a forest, and combined with how well the world was put together, it's a stunningly good looking game.
Yeah, I think the fact that it is a giant world, I mean, like, there is. I've yet to explore the islands, and we talked earlier about the starting zone. But like other than that, it's just a massive zone along the coast, and the fact that that has it's got a small loading screen in between like the cutscenes. But when you're in it, you're in it, and like there's no wait time.
Yeah,
that is amazing.
It's just a staggeringly huge world, and it's like. It's not like a fucking world where everything's standing still either. If you're riding on your horse through the fucking woods and there are wolves, those wolves are doing wolfy things. They're going around doing wolfy things in the wolfy wilderness. Like, you can see them running around and like attacking animals and shit. If you're riding through a town, you're riding full speed and it's running at 60 frames a second and it looks that good and you're going through a town, but you can still see like kids are like running around and like
people are reacting to you riding through full speed at a town. First off.
They're freaking out, or they're like getting out of your way in some cases, or just standing there and getting bowled over by my horse in some cases. But that aside, it's yeah, the world is just fucking incredible. Overall, it's a beautiful looking game. But I do want to say that technically, I do see what the downgrade people are talking about. It doesn't look technically that impressive. It's purely from like an individual standpoint. Like if you look at a specific scene, it wouldn't look that amazing. But the fact that that scene is just part, it's just being rendered with the whole world also being rendered around that scene is makes you have to step back and go, okay, what are they actually doing with the horsepower I'm giving the game? And they are actually doing quite a lot. And it is the best looking open world game out there. So that finally gets to actual gameplay, I guess the piece that matters.
Oh yeah, so yeah, I've been duping gold. Is that the part we're talking about?
We can. Like, so what run me through your process though. What's up? How did you start on this journey and where are you now?
Basically like I'm there for the story. I like the writing. The like gameplay, which we'll jump into. I don't think it's not as precise as something like a Bloodborne or a Dark Souls.
Oh yeah, Brad said it perfectly. Like going from fucking Bloodborne to this was so jarring. Like the Bloodborne's all about like even though it's 30 frames a second, it feels like precise in a way that just doesn't.
Yeah, like you can do like one of the silly things like with the ragdoll physics, like you can spin around in circles. There's precision to Bloodborne, and yeah. I guess the best way to describe Witcher is there's momentum.
Yeah,
like everything you like do feels weighty, and yeah. I guess like I'm okay with that. There are times in which I enjoy like playing. I guess the way they intend you to of being real careful with some of your attacks and all that. There are other times where it's just like you know what, I'm just gonna just attack spam.
Yes,
and so because of that, I have. More or less just decided like, you know what? I don't really care that much about the economy in the game. There are, at least as of right now, because it is the, early version and I don't have to like auto update. I'm just going to see about getting like 1,000 crowns, which is the economy. Like it's their version of dollars.
Yeah. The dollars. Yeah.
So I actually have like, 1,500. But no, 150,000.
Yep, you have 1.5 million, don't you?
I'm not in the millions. I'm assuming I don't need that many.
Okay, you have 150,000. All right, just because I remember seeing the number when you seemed me to it.
I got like, a lot of money.
You fucking monster!
And I have the option to do that. I would have had the option to do that were it a PC game whenever I wanted because, it's mods.
Yeah.
But it just seemed like, I'm only going to play this once. Let's have some fun with it.
Yeah.
Let's go all out.
What has it allowed you to do? What have you done with your well-earned, what was it, pearl money?
Basically, yeah, you abuse the fact by buying just a crap ton of pearls from a fisherman and then having a blacksmith turn them into... you buy shells from a fisherman, have the blacksmith turn them into pearls, which are infinitely more valuable, and he does it for like 1 cent per.
Yep.
He's a very nice individual. He's doing it as just like, it's like the free breadsticks at a, Italian restaurant or something.
Yep.
Then you go about selling that and just making bank. There's a couple other ways to increase the amount of money you're making. But other than that, yeah, it's kind of crazy.
So what has that allowed you to do? Have you like just bought all the armor or whatever? I don't know what you can buy. There's so much that's level limited.
It's really I don't feel bad about just like talking to people and like, hey, I'll buy up all your Gwent cards. Hey, you have like you have crafting recipes, I'll buy those up. Because it is so different from a generic RPG, I don't really know like what are the rare crafting materials that I would need to then later have an armor like craft fancy stuff. Also, yeah. I'm level 4. Actually, I think I'm level 6 now. They're like, I can't wear the epic armor because that's intended for people at like level 20.
Yeah, or level 37. It's like, fuck.
But yeah, it's just like, I'll just, rather than going out of my way to like gather materials or something, I don't feel pressured to do that. I can just go to the herbalist and say, hey, I'm buying all your stuff.
Yeah. And you know what? I might end up getting there eventually. Like, I'm playing PC version, so I assume I'll be able to like just hack in gold if I ever feel like that. This is the first Witcher played game I've really played. And the weird thing I'm finding is because of the fact that so much of it is level limited, so I found like a superior set of Ursine Witcher armor or whatever it is, and it's like some fucking rigged armor that's like 5 times the armor ratings in my current one, but it's level limited to level 37. So I'm level 10 now, and I've played for 25 hours or so to get there. So it's like a pretty slow leveling curve. So it's going to be like ages away before I get it. So I'm not really like sitting here going, oh shit, I need to save up for that armor. Because I assume that by the time I've played that much of the fucking game, I've just like slowly accumulated everything. Because another way you can really get a lot of shot really quickly in The Witcher is if you take over bandit camps, you realize that, hey, because it's like a relatively realistic rendered world, bandit camps are full of like great, like bags of shit and boxes of shit. So yeah,
bandits have camps because they made bank.
Yeah,
they're not working on the bridge anymore. They got a whole camp set up.
One of them, I spent like a good 15 minutes just opening shit and taking everything. It was like a multi-level with ladders and shit bandit camp, and I was just like I spent that whole time just looking nooks and crannies for boxes of shit and taking everything in them. And it's like stuff like that where like you can just like. The economy is really well done, I think, as a person who's not abusing it yet. I think it works out. So you can play it either way. Like on the flip side of it, I haven't been buying every recipe and manuscript or whatever, because I am worried about, hey, there might be like this sword I really want to craft later that might need like some dust I don't have yet, so I'll have to buy it. You can really do it either way, and I don't see any problem with it. But yeah. So overall, like, what do you think of Witcher 3 so far? Are you going to keep playing it, or do you think you'll like kind of ease off it like you did Skyrim and the rest?
I think I'll keep playing it only because the story seems, maybe not the initial story, but like the edge, like the part around the story seems more interesting than Skyrim. Like Skyrim's main attraction was open world, and then later like the modability scene of it.
Right.
Maybe people enjoy the main story of Skyrim, but
it was alright.
It was not for me.
It wasn't bad.
It had awesome music. Amazing. That,
yes.
Music.
Yes.
Man.
Shouts were good too.
Yep. And when you get to Valhalla, whatever it is the first time, that was sick.
But yeah, I enjoy the setting and the story of Witcher more so. So I'll probably keep playing it for a little bit.
Hmm. I hope I don't get tired of it.
I'll need to budget my time more of it, because like, I'll sit down and play a couple hours and I'll look at the clock. It's like, should have gone to bed an hour ago. I've been playing this all day.
I woke up this morning at 7 o'clock in the afternoon, and I knew I had to set an alarm, otherwise I would just miss the podcast. Because lo and behold, well, for like 5 minutes later, it was 11:47 in the afternoon, just before noon. Sorry. And I was like, fuck, I've just been playing The Witcher for fucking 4 hours and hadn't even noticed the time go by. It's one of those games. Because there's always something to do. Like, you're just going over here, it's like, oh, there's something over there. And you just give you something you want, like XP, because you definitely do want to level, because the leveling system is actually, it's not that varied, but you can definitely optimize and shit with it. It's pretty fun to play with. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
That game's cool.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, Mitch and Noob, are you guys thinking about buying it or getting into The Witcher?
I already have it. It's just a matter of installing and playing it.
Beautiful. Yeah. You have a lot to look forward to, both of you, actually.
Sounds really good.
And Mitch's case, I'd just say, hey, if you get a feel for Witcher 2 if you really want to, but I just play Witcher 3, because they're not really linked. Yeah, honestly. And
are
Witcher
there
3
lanes in it, though?
No, there isn't. So maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you should just play some
gold. Hit creeps and get gold? Is that how you earn money?
Well, you hit peeps and then you get their skins, and you sell skins for not much gold.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right, I'm sold.
So awesome. Good. That's what I'm happy.
Can I tell other people they suck? All right, sorry.
Well, you can, but you just be talking to everybody.
No, in fact, but similar to League of Legends, people will either be immediately terrified of you or will say you're complete shit. As you walk
by. Yeah. All right. Sounds like a good game.
Yeah. Yeah, the NPCs handle that part for you. So it's essentially the best of both worlds.
Beautiful.
And with that, we're going to hit a short break and come back with the news. I didn't even know what that was. That wasn't a horn.
That was the news. That's how. Isn't that how they introduce news in your country?
Can Darbleton, can you edit in like a fucking foghorn or something with that?
Like, do you actually want a foghorn?
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be sick.
Yes.
See what I can do.
And we're back from that break. Hello. Welcome. Thanks for sticking around. I don't know where you are, but there you go. So this off, I forgot one thing very important about the Witcher I hadn't asked you, Doubleton.
Yeah.
And your answer to this is, will reflect upon your character. How long is your beard?
I have not shaved it since I was forced to shave it for the cutscene.
Correct answer. But, so if people know, Witcher 3 has real-time beard growth.
Oh my god. Oh,
and wow. Also, like, I think the first cutscene that I know of in a game, or first shaving scene in a game.
Yeah. Yeah, a forced shaving, which is kind of hilarious.
When forced shaving.
Yeah, like you're meeting this like king or whatever. I won't go into like actual what he is and stuff, but you get shaved to meet him.
Brilliant.
You can object, but I believe you can't stop yourself from being shaved. But from then on, how it works is like every day in game that it progresses, your beard literally gets longer. Although I think I have hit the limit, and it's not as long as I would hope. But it's still pretty luscious. I like
it. But he grows a lot of beard, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. Like, you can have clean shaven if you want to.
I have like the classic Asian thing where I can't fucking grow facial hair. So I was wondering if it's like that. But I'm glad I get to live a fantasy
live vicariously through this fantasy character. It's actually pretty great. The only like weird part about that, from my opinion, my perspective, is apparently you can actually do a lot of beard styling that I hadn't realized. Like, there's like beard stylists around the world that actually cut your hair, like change your haircut and change your beard. I did not know
you changed your hair. I was wondering about that as well. Like, you know, real talk, I was like, you know, I haven't shaved, but that's partially because I don't know where the barber is. I'm curious now.
Oh, like, you can't self-shave.
Yeah. I don't know.
There's no razors. Oh.
No, well, I didn't. So
I remember I've killed a bandit, and I think I looted a razor off him.
Yeah, I have a razor, but you can't. There's no option to use it to cut your beard. So that's crazy. I know I freed a barber from a bandit camp, and he said he was at this town, and he'd cut my beard for free. But going off Danny O'Dwyer, apparently there are there's large variance in how good the quality of the beard cutting you'll get will be. Apparently,
that's super impressive. That's crazy.
So, like, I don't know if I want a chance. Just a random dude who I saved from a bandit camp's beard cutting? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the Witcher 3. That's the Witcher 3 moment for the news section. We only have one piece of news this week. Unless there's anything else aside from this VR news. Like, anyone have any news they want to bring up for the show?
I have one, and it's not something we have to really talk about. It's just that Blizzard banned 100,000 World of Warcraft accounts.
Oh, yeah.
This last week.
Yep.
So
I think Sony Online Entertainment did the same thing recently for their dumb game that no one plays, H1N1, H5N1, something like that.
What's that? Is that a zombie game?
It's another zombie
game. Yeah, H1DayZ.
Yeah, H1DayZ or something like that.
The quest for more money?
Yeah. Infestation H5N1 stories or something.
Wait, so why'd they get banned? Why the 100? What?
Botting, right?
Suspicion of botting. More or less. Ah. So there's a process for repealing getting banned, but I mean, of those 100,000 accounts, like the process apparently takes forever.
The interesting thing for that H5N1 game is if you publicly apologize for cheating, you can get unbanned, which I found sort of hilarious.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. But yeah, so they just banned a bunch of botters and dupers. So
it's good. That's always a good thing.
Yeah. Also, I like that the people who offered the centered around a specific botting program in the WoW thing of like basically they hadn't been caught in like they've been doing it for maybe close to a decade, maybe 7 years or something. but they basically said, like, you know, hey, we told you guys not to use your main accounts. Sorry. We've been, like, we've been one step ahead of Blizzard for all these years. Guess they finally caught us.
Right.
Like, they weren't trying to get defensive about it at all. It's like, yep, but yeah, we knew this day was coming.
Right.
So, nice. So it's H1Z1, Z1, and
okay.
You have to apologize on YouTube. Publicly apologize on YouTube.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah. Beautiful.
I like it. That's cool. More shit should be like that. I don't know. Public shaming is something I've always been on the fence about, but probably in favor of in reality.
Wow.
Depends what you're shaming them over. If it's internet bullshit, I think that's perfectly viable.
Do you tie your subordinates to, like, a wagon wheel and make them sun themselves for days? Is that what you do in your military?
I'm thinking more like that kind of shit. Like, you know, like making a stupid YouTube video. That's more real, man. That's more real.
Is it all really right. That real?
No. That's why I love it. It's because it's the shaming is equivalent in bullshit as the original thing they did, which is super good. All right, so the one news topic we have for the week before we talk about Mad Max for the rest of the episode, I guess, is Oculus. Surprise! In our VR minute for the week, Oculus, which was announced to come out late next year, first quarter next year, has an interesting approach to addressing the hardware concerns problem. Have you guys seen this?
The recommended specs, yeah.
Yeah. So the general idea of this is they published a set of recommended specs, which is an NVIDIA GTX 970 or AMD R9290. So thankfully what I've got, which was a massive surprise to me.
Unfortunately, but for me, who just upgraded, a big fuck you.
Because you got a 960 and then
right.
970.
I mean, it's to be fair, it's like a i5 2500K or something like that.
It's i5 4590, but right. You won't actually, you probably won't notice the difference.
But I mean, it's they say minimum, but I mean, it's minimum for the full experience is the quote, I think, directly. So, I mean, like, you'll obviously be able to play as long as you're around that region.
So I'll read it out. So they go on to, like, blah, 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 GPU performance, all that kind of stuff. And then they go, taking all of this into account, our recommended hardware specification designed to help developers tackle these challenges, so challenges over standardization specifically, and ship a great Rift experience to Rift users. This is the hardware we recommend for the full Rift experience, which is the ones I just named, 8 gigs of RAM as well, on top of what I previously named. The goal of this is all Rift games and applications to deliver a great experience on this configuration by default. We believe this It Just Works experience will be fundamental to VR's success, given that underperforming system will fail to deliver a comfortable presence. The recommended spec will stay constant over the lifetime of the Rift. As the equivalent performance hardware becomes less expensive, more users will have systems capable of the full Rift experience.
That's insane say something crazy. Like PC games, where by definition it's like tech moves at a quite speedy pace, right?
Yeah.
To be like, oh, yeah, if you're going to be making games on the Rift 2 years from now, you better be able to run it perfectly fine on this, which is a very... Yeah. I mean, I guess that's why they said minimum for the full, but I can't imagine that staying static. And I can't imagine that even, like, I don't think many games will require a 970 to have a minimum experience on.
I think, I don't know, because even a shitty looking game, a relative shitty looking game, running in VR, because remember it's like 95 or 90 frames per second or something like that.
Yeah.
And they actually quote the resolution here. So, the resolution, the published resolution, so look, let's see, the Rift runs at 2160 by 1290 hertz. Mm-hmm. So even if you have a shit looking game, running at 2160 by 1290 hertz is hard.
Yeah.
And doing it over that's the full resolution. So that's both screens included in that resolution. So I can definitely see there being a min spec. Like it is one of those cases in PC history, and there's very few of these. I think Apple is one of the previous ones that did this, that there has been a deciding moment. There's been that moment where we go, okay, we need to like literally break shit off here.
And but go, I mean, okay. The difficult thing for that is like that's assuming if like Oculus Rift exists as a platform on its own, that game,
which it doesn't.
You know, yeah, exactly. And the fact of the matter is it relies on, you know, a existing PC, and more importantly, it's not like the only thing. Like if you own a PC, you don't have to use an Oculus Rift. So yeah. It can't really enforce like how, I mean, are they licensing games? Like you have to be licensed to be able to develop for Oculus Rift? Because I know they're like, they gave the green light for adult programs to be able to be used with Oculus Rift.
Right.
Like you can have like porn on it. But
yeah, which is going to be fantastic.
Yeah. The important part is it's an open platform.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. But I mean, I can't imagine them being able to, you know, push around developers being like, make sure it fits the specific, like, you know, our standard, because if it is an open platform, like, good luck, because I don't think it's happening.
I don't know, because, sure, you're right. Like, it's going to be a case where, hey, this is the minimum spec they recommend, but obviously that doesn't mean that everyone has to go for that minimum spec. They can go lower.
They definitely can go lower, but I mean, like, yeah. I think a lot of games down the line, to say something like, oh yeah, forever, this will be the minimum step. That's, I mean, unless they're going to ship one out every 2 years, like a new Oculus.
I actually totally disagree, because specifically because it's running on PC. Because it's running on PC, you can say this is the minimum spec for your game. But that doesn't mean it's the recommended spec for your game.
Oh,
like, you can have your game running at this, at its minimum settings, and it will check the box for being right for Rift. Like, your game could actually require, like, the NVIDIA Extreme blah, 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 right. Titan 4X or whatever the fuck later. But as long as if you turn everything down to minimum, it hits this spec. I think that's their intention.
You think then, like, the forever remark, it's sort of, like, anticipating that there will be multiple things or multiple releases of the Oculus Rift, which will then increase the minimum, you think? Or that's a fucking hard limit where it's like, yeah, 2035, this is what you're going to be playing your Oculus Rift games on, minimum.
I think their biggest hope is to have a second Rift.
Right.
I think no one is sure whether we'll even get the second Rift.
Right.
We'll probably put it out, but whether it'll be successful or not is the question. So I think they're only looking at the near-term future, like the next 5 years or whatever. And over 5 years, I think a 970 is a minimum spec. It's, you know, fairly conservative. I think that's fine. Yeah. Like The Witcher's minimum spec is lower than that, much lower. Its recommended spec is 970. So, yep. Of course, that's not running at massive resolution at 90 frames, but like, so it really does put into question what will these games look at? Like, these are a pretty tall order to ask for a 970p minimum spec, but what can you point to that will actually, what will that actually look like? Because you won't get games that look as good as The Witcher running at that resolution that it hurts. It's going to be very interesting.
I mean, like, stuff like Star Citizen and, like, essential, like, massive open-world simulations, I imagine, are quite difficult to run with even a 970. Because those are the kind of games where, you know, you're running, you know, dual monitor, and it's still a decent slog to get them running at, like, the highest settings.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see why they set, you know, the minimum for the full experience that low. But I'm just wondering if that's actually future-proof.
I think it's a five-year plan. That's my guess. Like, it'd be a five-year. Like, same as console generation. I think that if they tie themselves to the console generations, assuming there is a next console generation, which there probably will be, looking at the numbers this year, then that's probably a good turnover. Because, like, it doesn't matter how successful the Rift is. Very few games will be made for just the Rift.
Right. It's, yeah.
Especially top-end games. Mm-hmm. So in most cases, it'll be like a console game that also happens to run on the Rift, like a Morpheus game that also happens to run on the Rift. In which case, that I think being tied to that five-year cycle is actually probably a good plan. But that's again, all speculation. We don't know.
Do we have a firm date, or is it Q1 2016?
I think it's Q1. I
don't believe they have a firm date. Well, like, one interesting thing is I thought they would maybe try to, not preempt Valve with their VR, because November's coming quite soon, but at least, you know, aim for holiday 2015. But no, they're waiting it out, which I thought was surprising, because, you know, people are saying Steam VR is quite superior.
We brought this up last episode, and like we didn't talk about it much, but I think it's a pretty big mistake, honestly. Not in terms of like, oh, Steam will eat all the lunch, but more like the better product is coming out first. Like, that's what it's looking like. And for all intents and purposes, the better product looks like it's coming out first. So if SteamVR, if SteamVR is successful, they could be the people who set shit.
Exactly. Yeah.
They could set the standards, which is perhaps more important than being the bigger seller, at least at the start. I don't know.
And I think I understand that there's going to be, because it's an early, very early technology, right? There's room for competition to come in after. Like, people aren't going to be adopting SteamVR immediately. So I understand why they're doing it. But yeah, I totally agree with your analysis that theirs is clearly not a great product when put up to the SteamVR. And I don't think, you know, 1 year is going to change. I don't think it's going to make leaps and bounds. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The big question is whether they're going to have a controller coming out with it. It could very well be that they weren't originally looking to have the controllers come out with it. They've always wanted to have controllers come with the Rift, but it could very well be that they didn't originally plan to do so. But now that SteamVR is announced and coming out with the controllers, they might want to.
Yeah, competition is great. Now, hopefully the Oculus will be better.
Yeah. Get your VR rooms ready, guys.
Not everybody has right on that
kind of fucking disposable income.
Or insanity when it comes to Steam VR. VR in general.
I'm still looking forward to it. Like, you've had the opportunity, Thelbleton. I'm saving my VR cherry for the first actual piece of consumer kit I buy, which is probably looking at the Rift. So not the Rift, the Vive. So find out. And that's it for news this week. So thanks for listening, everyone. We're going to be talking about the Mad Max for the rest of the show. I'm not sure how long that will be, but we are going to be talking about it. So Noob.
Okay. I'll do you have any plugs now? My plugs are, I'm going to link it later so you can post it, but that
after. I mean, like, let's just do plugs now in case anybody who doesn't want to deal with spoilers, we'll end the show and then post show
like a plan. Noobarama, plugs.
Things I talked about earlier, which was like the Pearl Harbor back in time thing. I'm going to, I guess, link the After Action Report, which is really interesting read. It's a short read, but it's kind of hilarious. And I guess it's a giant bomb piece of gaming hub. Yeah.
Nice. Let's post that. We'll have those links in our show notes, and you've just posted the Google Doc.
Okay.
Doubles in. Plugs.
My plug is going to be a... I think we've talked about... Have we talked about extra credits before? The YouTube, game development education thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have, yeah.
A developer from... a couple AAA, like she's done AAA work and is now gone indie, named Lisa Brown, has started doing just like, it's just, it was a neat thing. I figured, you know, anybody who's interested in development would enjoy it. It's basically doing something similar where she has, basically stream development of games and and analyze them and it interacts with the chat and whatnot. But yeah, it's just twitch.tv/Wertle, WERTLE. I think her Twitter's that same thing.
Nice. Yep. Cool. Mitch, any plugs?
I mean, aside from the obligatory league plug, if anybody wants to play with me, I'm MARADIL, and I will play with you. I promise not to flame you too bad, just so you can have an accurate experience of the game.
It's been a while since I've played it. I'm actually curious. Question. I know like Dota 2 has, it's got the various channels and whatnot. And like they have groups that are larger than five, in which that's just like a chat and meetup capacity. Does League have anything like that in Engine?
I think they do. I haven't messed around with it a whole bunch, but I know that they have different chats. I don't know if you can start them or if they're just their own static thing. Just
curious if there's a giant bomb chat.
I should look. I should totally take a look next time I play. Yeah. I'll do some homework, I guess, in the world of League. Other than that, people should try out Besieged. It's a lot of fun, and it's on early access, I believe, still, and they're updating it pretty regularly. So Nice. If you like that sort of a thing, give it a shot.
Absolutely. And for my plug, I have two this week, and neither, they're not books nor fitness related. They're actually pretty much both kind of the same thing, not really. People who've been enjoying the Giant Bomb Metal Gear playthroughs, and they kind of want something to tide them over till the inevitable playthrough of 4, which I cannot wait. There is two plugs for you, one of which is what Thurbleton linked me to a long time ago. The Let's Play Archive, which is lparchive.org, has a pretty much a massive database of Let's Plays. lparchive.org.
I didn't link you that.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
I mean, like,
it was used quite a while ago.
You mean Giant Bomb Unarchived or Unarchived?
Nope. lparchive.org. Quite a long time ago. So it's a massive database. I think it's linked to Something Awful, like relatively sideways in some cases for them. But it's a massive archive of Let's Plays by like shitloads of people from the community that are almost in every case very well produced. But more importantly, you can actually look through it and filter by like whether it's humorous or not, whether it has a voiceover or not, what game, obviously, you want to actually look at a Let's Play for, and so on and so forth. And using that, I discovered a really good playthrough of Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker, which was the PSP Metal Gear game that happens between Metal Gear Solid 3 and Metal Gear Solid 5. And actually goes into some of the like big boss lore. It's core canon. It was made by Hideo Kojima, so it's actually really important to the story. To some case, or depends how you look at it, I guess. Like whatever it's a PSP game, not everyone's played it, so maybe he won't design too deeply around it or whatever. But the person I'm actually watching play it is Chip Cheesem. So I'll link him in the actual show notes, but Chip Cheesem LPs, he does a really great playthrough, and he actually does a co-op with another YouTuber chick, and it's actually quite entertaining but also really informative, because he goes to like every codec and so on. He actually cuts it, so you can just sit there and watch codecs if you want to, or you can just sit there and watch the gameplay if you want to, etc. It's actually really well put together. The second one I will note is for people like Mitch, who want to catch up on Witcher lore, and that's another person I've plugged before, Jesse Cox, on the show. He actually has a really great playthrough of Witcher 2, which obviously you won't see every option because it's only one playthrough, but his Witcher 2 playthrough is really great because he goes through almost every dialogue option. He looks up shitloads of side quests and places to find interesting loot and that give you like more exposure to the world. But more importantly, like, he takes it seriously, but also keeps it humorous in a really good way. So Jesse Cox on YouTube. I also have that in the show. So with that, we're moving over to Mad Max Talk. Bye, Nubrum.
Bye.
People at home, spoiler warning!
Foghorn noise.
Yes, foghorn noise there. But yes, you can figure that out, Thurbleton. But we're going to be talking about Mad Max, and we've all seen it. All three of us have seen it.
Unfortunately.
And I think that movie was fucking incredible. Okay. From the maker of Happy Feet 2 and Happy Feet 1 comes Mad Max. It's like, what?! It's like, how?
Wait, hold on.
I'm not fucking with you. This is actually made for the person who made Happy Feet 1 and 2. That was his last two credits. Yeah. Of course, he also made the original Mad Max.
Right, the first three.
Yeah. But yes, his recent history is fucking kids' movies. And he makes one of the most balls-to-the-wall continuous action movies I've ever fucking seen. Holy shit. Yeah, it's crazy. So what do you guys want to talk about in terms of Mad Max?
I mean, we could talk about the whole nine yards. Why do you like it so much? Let's start there.
All right, I like it because I love movies that are so action-packed that I feel tired at the end of them. And not because I'm tired of the movie, but tired because I'm physically exhausted because of all the things I've been fucking slammed into my head for the last 2 hours. Like, I love that feeling. It's very few movies give me it. The Raid Redemption, which is an Indonesian movie. That did it. Yes, excellent movie from start to finish. That's the last movie that gave me this feeling. And by the end of it, you just feel like exhausted. You just watch 2 hours of just hyper violence, and you just feel this is the same. Like he spends the first fucking quarter of the movie strapped to the front of a fucking car as it fucking drives through fucking storms and sandstorms and shit. It is nuts. It is balls to the wall crazy. That's why I love it. I love it. How about you guys?
It was good. I enjoyed the I like the color palette of it, I guess is a good way of saying just like it's how vibrant the world feels despite the fact that it is just it's a wasteland, but it is such a bright and alive looking wasteland.
It's alive in that the world has life in it, but it's also very like barren and like
if the camera looked anywhere other than what was happening on Fury Road at that one point in time, it would be a barren wasteland. But like you said, it is a nonstop action thing. It is a Mad Max movie in the same way that like 2 and 3 were, of that it has very little to do with Max, and Max is just like he's the guy who is he's the crowd. He's the people watching. He's like the through line, not as much like the other characters are just as much the main characters as Max is.
Yeah, Furiosa is in my opinion the main character of the movie. And she's fantastic. Like holy shit, I was not expecting Charlize Theron to pull off a badass chick, but I haven't seen Monster.
So well, I mean, like, what was it? Pan, the Aliens prequel. That's not technically a prequel.
And what's it called?
Prometheus. She is a very strong-willed character in that one as well.
She was more of a bitch in that movie, though. And this is just it felt like she was just some bitch. In this, it felt that she was like an actually.
She is a bitch who has beliefs that more closely tie into you, opposed to one who is trying to like follow her father's wishes as well as world domination.
No, but she didn't have a. It's not just that she didn't have a character in that movie. Like she just kind of she had a reason.
Not a lot of people had character in that movie either.
Yeah, yeah,
that movie was a very like mysterious movie.
And this like her whole emotional journey was an actual journey that you could see in. And that was emoted
well,
through the character.
It was a very lean movie, so that like basically anything that happens has meaning to it, and they don't have time to like leave stuff to second guessing. There's no time for it. You got to get back on the road. Got to keep going. So what lines that are delivered need to be like need to express a lot of stuff. The one beef I have with the movie does have to do with Charlize Theron. And that is just like her as well as, I can't remember the actor's name, but the lady who was like Samuel Jackson's like sidekick in Kingsman. I don't know if you have either of you guys seen Kingsman.
No, I haven't seen Kingsman yet.
I mean, like, again, slight spoilers on there, but the actor, she plays the role of a person who is disabled and has no legs. And the legs have been replaced with like knives or some shit, so that basically like she chops people up while running around and stuff. The Kingsman. So the actual actor is not like that. They have both real legs. It's all CG.
Oh, really?
And that's the same thing with Charlize Theron. She is the Imperiosa or Furiosa rather. Has half an arm.
Yeah,
don't know how they lost it, but Charlize Theron has both fully functional arms.
Yes.
And it's just like, well, it's you know, it would be awesome if they had a person who was actually disabled.
Oh,
pull off this.
Oh, role. Yeah.
Like one of my favorite characters when I was getting like becoming an age in which I would learn to appreciate film was The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. And the guy who plays the bad, I can't remember his name. I can look him up. But basically, a little known fact, he has like one of his fingers is short, like shorter than the rest. He has no fingernail on one hand.
Man.
And it's just this weird thing. It's like, oh, it's just this actor who has a few, like, you know, he's not, it didn't come out of the oven quite right, or maybe he lost it early, like halfway through life. I don't know. But it's just like, wow, it would be great if they want a character that has, you know, is missing an arm and has a lot, is a very strong-willed female character. It would be great if they could find that in a real person.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess. But at the same time, like,
Charlize Theron does an amazing job. I realize, yes.
Yeah, she does a great job. At some point, like, I wonder how many actors of her, like, ability to act are disabled in that way.
We could go down that road and talk about, like, you know, the idea of learned helplessness and how, like, people, there might be a woman out there like that, but...
Yeah, but would she be willing to... Is she able to act?
Does she think she has a chance to get that role?
Yeah. Yeah.
When all society says like no.
Yeah, would she win against Charlize Theron?
But to be honest, the recording's at 2:24, and I don't really want to cut this up at the 3-hour mark. So we're not going to talk about it.
Yeah, and also we wouldn't have too much to say because honestly, we don't know really how the acting society works. Honestly, but
it's Hollywood.
It's Hollywood, man.
But in terms of the actual story, and it's, okay, first off, or I guess third off, whatever we're on right now in the points.
Yeah, sure.
That guitar dude on the truck, like the one and only soundtrack. Was there an actual soundtrack or was it just that dude?
It was just him.
Some people claim that it's always just him, but no, I swear in a couple moments that he wasn't there, there was still a soundtrack. But when it was that specific theme, like I could say, you could kind of call that the theme of the movie. When that was playing, he was indeed there. Like,
you know what? I'm going to have to watch this movie a second time, but did it feel like there were like two or three scores in the entirety of the film that they just kept reusing in different ways?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
That is an amazing film trick that very few films do, but like it when done correctly is great.
Yeah, like that in Pirates of the Caribbean. I can't think of many other. Like the original Pirates of the Caribbean.
Dark Knight did it with Joker theme. Just having that one like chord playing, like rising just constantly.
Yeah. Yes.
Super tense.
Like it's
again, just The Good and the Bad, the Ugly.
I honestly think like, cause this movie has been sitting in the hopper for like 15 years. It's kind of crazy. I was filmed like quite a while ago. But even though it had some problems, it definitely feels like, if it wasn't for how well it was edited or the music of this movie, I don't think it would be anywhere near as good. Like, it is a director's movie. It was good because of that soundtrack, because of that amazing usage of that soundtrack, because of the way he cut it together. It was just spectacular. And it wouldn't have been better if anyone else had made that movie, honestly. So you're right. Like that, it would be really interesting to watch that and see if the guitar guy was always there for the guitar shit.
I guess, now throwing it to Mitch. What did you like most about it?
It was an okay movie. I came out of it not like everybody else, I guess. I mean, everybody was like, oh, it's the greatest movie. It's like got something like 95% on IMDb. And I was like,
yeah.
No. Taking examples, like the guitar guy is cool, sure, but you're living in a post-apocalyptic world. How does having a giant truck with a bunch of speakers and a guy playing just the guitar following you around and just burning up the finite source of gasoline, like that makes no sense at all.
It gets you pretty hyped.
It does, sure, but it was just like, okay, I couldn't forgive, I guess because I knew that it was so highly rated going into it, the Portland hipster in me came out and was like, I'm just going to not like just accept people's praise and see if I actually like it. So like as an action movie, it was good, but The Avengers was also a good action movie. I would argue that The Avengers has more of a plot than Mad Max.
I would agree with that. Like I definitely agree, only because like it is the case of, there is so much going on in that, and the fact that they had there's a lot of stuff that had to get cut. Like the one of the reasons why it excels, and like what Cynic was talking about with The Raid as well, those are very simple movies.
Yeah,
right.
But the story, like it, they go for the bare minimum of telling the story while still being excellent.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, and I think
they invest their points in other parts of the skill tree.
There we go.
Beyond just dialogue, they try to express, similar to Half-Life 2, or Half-Life 1 rather, they try to explain a story without the use of dialogue.
Yeah.
I can't remember if we talked about that before or after we started recording.
No, we didn't. We didn't talk about
it. Damn!
But I think, I don't fucking know anymore, but it's definitely the show don't tell element of
right.
Film, You don't see the wives being like fucking tortured, but you do see the fucking milking room, which is fucked up in its own fucking way.
Oh, jeez.
Right.
God.
Yeah.
I think it's another reason I love it.
Just the power max is like, what is this? Oh, it's mother's milk. Oh, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah, he's like,
wait, what the fuck? Yeah. Or when,
but he just keeps drinking,
he like
it.
Walks away.
Well, he doesn't drink it. He uses it to clean his face off.
Oh yeah, so, yeah. That was one of my favorite scenes. When he just walks away with nothing into the darkness, and you see a massive explosion.
Then you're just like, okay, I guess that problem has been solved. And so there was good points. And to be honest, I think one of the things that annoyed me the most is that it didn't answer any questions at all.
Oh yeah,
like
yeah,
it was like, yeah. Why are the war boys white? Why are they all around? Why, or for example, Charlize Theron's super hot, like, female character, why is she not a breeder? Like, why?
Oh, yeah.
Why does a Morton Joe not breed with her? Who is a Morton Joe? Why does he open the movie and seem super sickly, but then go from super sickly to an unstoppable badass? Like, is it because he's, like, ingesting pure oxygen?
His gas max is hooked up to venom.
There we go. Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Bane reference for anybody wants
to. I love these questions you're raising, Mitch, because I had all the same ones, but we
really
took two different rows. Yes, we actually did.
My question was like, how did the, was it like Motor Boy or whatever, what are they called? War Boys? The one who like grows a conscious, I guess, he talks about how his Inky and Blinky laid off him, and then he motions that the two little like smiley faces he drew on his, his gross on his shoulder. Where the crap did he get a pen? That's the question I have.
Yes.
I assume it's a tattoo. I don't know.
Okay. Where did he get the ink?
Yes.
I don't know. Where do people get ink? I can't even answer that question alone. But, no, but it's, we went down two different roads. I asked those questions and you went, you know what? Fuck it. I don't care. And that's why I think I fell in love with it so much. Because
sure.
Yeah, because, like, who cares?
Right.
Like, Immortan Joe is sick, but maybe, like, yeah, maybe he's ingesting pure oxygen. Who the fuck cares? He's just a really cool-looking design character with a... I actually don't like his breastplate, but I like his whole, like...
I kind of do like the breastplate of just, like, it's a fat dude, but to anybody, like, looking at him from afar, let's say, like, down on the ground level, looking up at him, he looks ripped.
Yeah, he does.
Right. Except, he's just this gross metal.
Oh, fucking yeah!
I guess it was okay. It just felt like, and I guess another big rub for me was, and I actually went back and watched all of the Mad Max movies after this.
Oh God, I did.
It was, let's make things weird and let's do it in a gratuitous way to a point where it doesn't make sense.
Oh,
and
no,
it's
I
almost
love that.
He's like, and I wouldn't mind it, but it almost feels like. Look how weird this is. Like, oh,
yeah,
milking these
like,
women.
You don't just
oh,
have, you just have like a, your older brother. You have an older brother who's like fucking midget in this weird, like this weird deformed midget dude who like just sits in this big fucking chair and does nothing the whole time. You don't just have like a
master
dude. Yeah, you don't have just have a surgeon. You have a dude with a big butcher's knife who just like butchers the girl to take out the baby. And just you don't just have him dispose of the body. You have him like slam it against the table. Like it's just yeah. It's...
sure. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Fair enough. It was just I just didn't understand. I guess maybe like in like, for example, like it felt like also that Mad Max, what is it, The Road Warrior, and this movie were kind of the same movie, because in The Road Warrior, he also ends up driving a big rig with a giant fuel tanker on the back, and they're also being chased by numerous people in smaller vehicles. It's like, did I just watch this movie, or? And then there's, of course, the guy who's in a gimp outfit chained to the hood of the truck for no reason, to then be unchained by the main bad guy, and then be like, go forth and do something. It's like, what? Why is he chained to your car? But,
oh, man. Yeah, it's dumb. It's dumb. I'm not going to say the movie isn't dumb, because it's dumb, but you either choose to revel in the dumbness or not, and it's your choice if you were at home. Your choice. I don't know. Like it's kind of like the first G.I. Joe movie.
Okay.
And I was one of the few people to fucking love that movie as well. And it's because I embrace the dumbness. You don't just have two people talking in a cell. You have two people talking in a cell and then zoom out to turn out that the hell is in a fucking aircraft carrier and there's fucking shit going on all around you. Like you don't have any single element of it being mundane. Everything is crazy. Which I really liked.
Right. And I guess I should have just come into it like I came into Pacific Rim, which I think is probably the greatest movie of all time.
Oh, great.
And I did not like.
Really? You don't? Yeah. How can you not like it? If you the just random, like, do they fight the robots and with the aliens.
Because I like modern anime rather than old anime. I think that's the main reason.
Okay.
Like, I don't like the whole, like, racial stereotype anime shit. I never liked that stuff, so. The fact that he was recreating that in a movie just didn't rub well with me. But go ahead. No, go ahead. You proceed on your point.
No, it's just like accepting a movie for what it's trying to be.
Yeah.
I think, which I can normally do. It's just when having a movie that is like, oh, this is the greatest movie ever, 95%. The plot is so good. And it was like, there's a plot? There's a plot to this movie? Like, a two and a half hour movie long.
It's very simple, but it's got enough plot.
We need to go from A to B, and then let's go back to A. Okay, let's.
Yeah.
Okay, just quick side thing. The old lady with the seeds.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did all of her own stunts. She's in her 70s.
That's hardcore.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. She is a badass.
I'm sold. I take it all back.
But it just straight up, like, yeah, and it was weird how many Australian actresses and actors there were in this movie. Oh, like models and shit.
Well, I mean, like it's throwback to
it's in Australia.
It's a modern day thing of Australia, right?
I guess so. Like Megan Gale, I like the naked person on top of the tower that you meet near the end of the movie. I was like, whoa, she's got a great body. Turns out, yeah, she's just a supermodel here. All right, sure. I some of the stuff was semi-distracting, but I was able to put it aside pretty easily as well. I don't know. I just think that.
Go ahead, sorry.
Some societal things don't make sense to me that you're right. Like the whole, like, it was that easy for Mad Max to take over. No, there's no fucking way no one else has taken over since, like, it's an old, sickly, dumbass man. Like, oh my god, there's like millions of you. And they're all thirsty. Like, if there's one thing that makes people angry and violent, it is being hungry and thirsty. And that society makes no sense. But yeah, it's like one of those things like where, well, you can either accept that he rules the society by giving them water, or you don't. And yeah.
This is a real question. How did the mask getting ripped out of his, like, mouth? How did that kill him? Because it wasn't, like, part of his body. Because at the beginning of the movie, you see, it like, the mask getting put on him. So
I don't think the mask by itself ripped out. I'm pretty sure did she have, like, a hook down his throat?
I must have just missed it. I just got, got washed out in the orange and brown filter.
Yeah, she shoves a hook down his throat, and then the car rips not just the mask, but his whole, like, fucking... Lower jaw and the inside bits that are attached to your throat out.
Only two movies have made me, like, reel backwards at the result of losing a jaw. This one and The Golden Compass.
Oh, is that like the polar bear fight? Is
yeah,
that-
the polar bear where it's just like the bad dude just like yelling at him, and then the other polar bear is like, "All right, we'll just keep yelling. I'm just gonna knock your lower jaw off." And it's like, what?
Fuck, that was the only good part of that movie. The whole the polar bears were the only good part of that fucking movie.
But,
So that was my max. Anything else? I don't know. That movie is great. We have different opinions about it, but there you go. I don't know.
I mean, I want to see it again, so I guess I can't say that it was a terrible movie.
I'm buying it, definitely, when it comes out in Blu-ray.
Also, the fact that the polecats, that was a practical effect, and they actually did that.
Serious?
Yeah, they actually did that. That was real life.
Very few CG effects in this movie, as well as the fact that almost no... I don't think there were any major injuries.
Yeah, that's apparently really like a massive point in their favor. Usually in practical effects movies like this, there's always injuries and shit. I don't know. I wonder why.
One would expect, especially with those polecats, they actually work. Like, the idea of just, like, it's a counterbalance. Scientifically, it's... The guy should never fall.
Right.
Because
the risk was getting them like chewed up in the wheels. I watched this whole thing about it. Because originally they were filming over in the Australian desert, and then it rained, and so they had to stop filming, and then it was like a year in between where they could come back and keep filming, and so in that year they sat down and figured out how to practically do this out of control acrobatic effect of pulling people out of cars and
when you're on a pole which is suspended above like another car. Fuck you.
Going 75 miles an hour. Yeah.
That was another example of why shit just doesn't start popping off. And if it does, it's for like a minor story beat and then it just starts popping off again. Like they're literally just having a conversation in their car, and then suddenly one of them gets pulled out of the car by a dude on a pole, which is strapped to another car, and then Mad Max jumps off into another pole, and he's like half horizontal to the ground, and then going under 75 kilometers an hour, then he goes up vertical again because those poles obviously swinging from side to side, and sees explosions behind him. That movie is nuts.
Then, also, it's a wonderful ability to they have. More or less just this one group is chasing this other group, and yet every fight scene, so to speak, is different. It's
different, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
It's great.
Also...
even the small ones, like the Furiosa fight scene with Mad Max, when they fight.
That was cool. Yeah.
And it was just it was this thing where it escalated. First it was the slow standoff.
Yeah.
Then the actual fighting between him and Furiosa, and then the war boy wakes up and
with him and the other dude and the chicks pulling the chain and all that. Yeah, crazy. Oh man,
it was good.
Anyway, I Bellwether needs to go to sleep. I need to go back to Canberra. We're ending this show. I guess those were our final thoughts. Mad Max is crazy. That's my final thought. Any final thoughts?
Well, is he crazy or is the whole world crazy?
Both. Why not both?
Yes.
Why not both?
He starts the movie by eating a live fucking, or not live, but
recently killed and raw two-headed lizard.
Yeah,
because yes.
Again. You don't just hear him eating it. He starts eating it, then turns to the camera, and then you see him suck it into his mouth. This movie never stops being awesome.
Yep.
This movie never stops being. And that's, I can't even.
The second one's being greenlit. I guess that's a good way to end.
The next two are being greenlit, actually.
Yeah, there you go. So, done.
I'll watch it. I'll see it.
I'm sold already. So, all right. See you guys next time.
Bye-bye.